high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the cosmos. I'm Art Bell, and this is that program covering all those time zones called Coast to Coast AM Weekend Version. It's great to be here, an honor to be here, actually. And in a moment, we're going to do something that I've never done before. Yeah, I just can't resist these things. So, I have no idea what we're about to get into. I mean, but I get an email like this, and it's irresistible for me. Morgan sends me an email which says, "York, I'm a blood-drinking, casket-sleeping vampire. It's more fun than you'd imagine. Vampirism has a deadly side as well. Want to talk about it? Well, yes. I just love this kind of email, but you never really know what you're going to be getting into. You just never know. But I have never interviewed a vampire. I know Annie has, but not for this would be a first for me, I think. Anyway, so we'll do that here in a minute, I think. Looking around the world, it doesn't look too good, as usual. Guerrillas overwhelmed an Iraqi police station west of Baghdad, meeting little resistance, and they went room to room shooting police in a bold, very well-organized assault that killed 23 and freed dozens of prisoners. Moreover, you know, the poor police in Baghdad, they're trying to keep them employed. They're paying a good wage for police, but they're getting mowed down. And even at the good wage, you'd have to think twice, I'm sure. Democratic presidential frontrunner John Kerry does it here in Nevada and the District of Columbia, and he would appear well on his way to the nomination. President Bush is sagging in the poll numbers, and the Democrats are pounding away, unrelenting, and things are beginning to get pretty hot in the presidential race. So he's made some about faces, the Iraq War Intelligence, his own military service record in question, cooperation with the panel investigating the 9/11 attacks. I mean, just backwards on everything. So politics getting hot. Well, let's see. A Carnival Cruise Line ship returned from a five-day cruise to Mexico on Saturday with more than 300 people sick. There's been an awful lot of that going on with cruise lines. Have you noticed? Looks like this may be the norovirus, they call it, spread through contaminated food, contact with infected people, poor hygiene, and the whole thing, they say, can be prevented by washing one's hands. In a moment, We will interview a vampire. By the way, next hour we're going to have William Buhlman here. We'll be talking about OBEs, out-of-body experiences, which are very real. Having had one myself, I know. Anyway, right now, here is somebody we will call, and I guess his associates call him, Morgan. Morgan, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Art.
Morgan, you understand when I get an email like this, I'm dying of curiosity. I've got a million questions. First of all, I guess, are you really what you say you are? This is not a put on a leg pull or anything like that?
No, this is a vampire lifestyle that we live. We do actually talk the talk and walk the walk.
You do. This is a real thing, then, not just I mean, there are people who claim they're psychic vampires. You're not that.
No, we have a coven in the state of Kentucky.
A coven? I thought that was for witches, but it's vampires, too?
Mm-hmm.
In Kentucky?
Yes.
Ah, good.
That's where I live.
Ways away.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty. I've got a million questions, so I where to begin? Let's see, you said... you said vampirism has its fun side, and why don't we begin there? What's fun about being a vampire?
Well, there's a playful side to vampirism.
Oh.
That is, if you're into going to cemeteries with other people and playing the role and sharing blood, it's very playful.
That's the playful side.
That can be part of it, yes.
Going to cemeteries, socializing and drinking blood. That's the playful side. Well,
it's a great liberation.
I'm extremely concerned about the deadly side here. Let's see. Let me pepper you with a few questions. First of all the myths that we've grown up with about vampires, you know, that are perpetrated by all the movies about vampires, are they basically mostly true, or, you know?
Well, we adopt probably 70% of what you see in the movies into our lifestyle.
You do?
Mm-hmm. For example, I do sleep in a casket.
All right. That's a good one right there. Now, you sleep in a casket. A comfortable casket?
Oh, yes, sir. It's you make it into a bed, and I sleep in it during the day.
Oh, that's right. That's another thing about vampires.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like the sun, or the sun, I guess I've been told, could even conceivably be deadly.
Well, not for me, but I avoid the sunlight.
Do you?
Not a good thing for me.
You shy away. Steaks have always been probably not, and I don't refer to the ones you grill, they've just been not the favorite thing of vampires through the ages. Is that still true?
That is very true.
Very true. So, and it's also then obviously or apparently true that if you drive a stake through the heart of a vampire, then you have finally and really disposed of that vampire. Is that a true statement?
Only if the head has been detached from the corpse.
Oh.
Otherwise, we reincarnate.
Do you know how many people may have driven in stakes over the years and forgotten the head part? Because I have not heard that. So the head has to go too, huh? All right. Well, is being a vampire, is it just something that you have adopted, it sounds like, from the culture? I was going to ask you if it was genetic, but it sounds like you decided in this life to be a vampire.
Well, pretty much so, but I was born with the bloodlust. And when you have the bloodlust, the first time you taste human blood, it unlocks a higher senses.
Can you remember the very first taste you had?
I can almost remember when I could not.
I mean, like when you cut your finger and you went,
no, well, I can remember
what?
That.
I mean, what?
I was born with the bloodlust, and from a very early age, I was drinking blood.
How early?
Oh, I want to say 3 or 4 years old. I was
four?
Yes, a very strange child.
God, you've barely given up the bottle by then.
Mm-hmm.
But there must have been something. I mean, like I said, did you cut your hand and just go, or what?
Early on, so yes. But today we use a method of intravenous needles to withdraw blood and put that into a chalice to drink.
So,
blood from the vein.
Oh, very much like a nurse might withdraw.
Mm-hmm. And we have we have a nurse in our group.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that profession might expose one to blood and bring one to the lust for it, huh?
Mm-hmm. And in that process, the awakening of the senses through the blood is a wonderful way to experience so many beautiful things in life, such as using it for out-of-body experiences.
To me, it was only just sort of salty and, yeah, I don't know, not delicious anyway.
Well, you probably weren't born with the bloodlust.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I'm naturally curious about this. And then, of course, another big question that everybody would have is about the possibility of disease. Anytime you're dealing with blood, certainly in our modern society, you've got to worry about heaven knows what.
Before someone is invited into our circle, they are screened and their blood is tested.
Really?
We make sure that our feeding circle stays pure. And that's very important for us to do.
Safe vampirism, one might say.
Mm-hmm.
How is it possible to ask how big your circle or coven is?
At this time, we have over 50 vampires.
Holy smokes!
Yes, and that's all ages. I want to say ages 21 through 50 and 56.
How in the world would, you know, even if you thought maybe you were a vampire or leaning that way, it's not like you can go to the Yellow Pages under V. You're very hidden, obviously. Is that true? Very
That's
secret?
Very true. People are invited to share in the vampire experience with us. Huh. And through time and meeting with them and getting to know them, we know if the person is correct to join us.
You know them when you see them?
Mm-hmm. And sometimes they choose not to.
Vampires able to recognize each other? I mean, could you be going down the street and say, oh, right there?
For the most part, yes.
Really? Mm-hmm. Is it a look? Is it a what? I mean, I'd like to know how to recognize a vampire.
It's more of a spiritual vibe that someone gives off. And when you sense that, you can then draw into that and get to know the person better.
Mm-hmm.
And as time goes on, you find out if they would be interested.
In joining, making a donation, all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's hard for, do you understand it's hard for most probably Americans sitting here listening to believe that there really are vampires? I mean, it really will come as a shock to a lot of people. I mean, it's just sort of the thing of myth and movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it's real. Huh?
Oh, yes, and this is a worldwide phenomenon, I've so learned. In New York City, there's thousands. In Atlanta, there's several thousand.
I'm sure those people in those cities will be happy to hear this. Thousands.
Mm-hmm. And they live by night when most people are working 9 to 5.
Uh-huh.
We're home sleeping.
Well, I don't know if you think of it as many people would think of it as an upside to vampirism, or at least in myth, is that you're basically immortal, that you're the undead, that you can't die. Now,
currently, I am a spirit in a human body.
Yeah.
That is my vampire soul, and it will follow me into the next life.
A vampire in this life, a vampire in the next life.
Mm-hmm.
Huh, that's probably why then at the age of 3 or whatever it was, you the lust hit you.
I believe so.
Are vampires happy people?
Oh, yes, very much so.
So then the old sort of picture that we all have from the movies of stalking around in the dead of the night with the very long, sharp teeth, you don't have those, do you?
Well, yes, I do.
Oh, you do?
I have naturally pronounced canine teeth, but
really,
we find that people who have the bloodlust,
yes,
who do not know it, are usually more miserable when they discover they have the bloodlust.
Until they find themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it really is a new life they walk into at that moment.
How does one come to the self-realization that, well, I'll be damned, I'm a vampire?
Well, it happens around puberty for most people, and it's a lust for blood.
Yeah, you're making that very clear.
I mean, there's no way around that. Desire blood.
You know, that just literally stands the hairs on the back of my neck up. I mean, thinking of you with your canine teeth and your lust, I just... Whew.
But we harm no one. Now, a young...
Well, now, how can you say that?
No,
you're putting big old, you know, puncture marks somewhere.
No.
No?
No, we draw blood from the vein, from a willing donor.
So that's the modern vampire world, huh?
Mm-hmm.
From a willing donor.
Mm-hmm. I would be very leery of someone walking in an alley who would want to bite you on the neck.
Well... See, I know I shouldn't be, but I'm even a little leery when the Red Cross would like my blood. But I mean, to get a solicitation from you, for example, I can't imagine how you could talk people, even leaning sort of in your direction to, you know, time to give for the cause.
Well, this is not for everyone. We know that.
Oh.
People who are born to this are the people we invite to our group.
It I think concerns me that there really are as many as you're claiming there are. I mean, thousands of mm-hmm. you in some cities. Mm-hmm. Do you think most are as devoted to yes. the lifestyle as you are? I mean, is it a very serious thing once you're in it? That's in it. You're in it.
Yes. Yes. No. And especially in Las Vegas near you.
Oh.
Yes, there are vampires.
mm-hmm. Could have gone all night long without telling me that. But
they won't hurt you.
Somehow, you know, Las Vegas, now that I think about it.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a wonderful city to be in during the night.
Well, the nice thing here is, you know, out in the desert, we have a long way to see you coming. But mm-hmm. I suppose you do... Do vampires still prowl the night?
Yes.
And you like cemeteries?
Mm-hmm. And we have nightclubs that we go to. Mm-hmm.
Now, do you ever run into situations where, you know, like when 50 people gather at night in a cemetery, for example, or even a fifth of that, mm-hmm. it would tend to draw attention to things, and occasionally I'm sure you would have brushes with terrestrial law enforcement.
It's really no problem. We know where to go, and we know where not to go. And we're breaking no laws.
Well...
And we're very careful. If a policeman does show up, then we stop.
I guess it's true. I mean, there's no law against sleeping in a casket. I suppose there's no law against drawing blood in the manner that you've described. I'm not sure about that. There could be some health code things, but... Basically, yeah, it doesn't seem like you're breaking the law, but still, when a bunch of people professing to be vampires mm-hmm. gather in a cemetery at night, I would think occasionally there would be, I don't know, a brush with authorities. And have you had any?
Never. It's not a problem. We know where to go.
Okay.
There have been vampires who have gotten in trouble with the law, and that's why we're very careful.
Do vampires... more than not have families or not?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes. I've married my vampire wife.
Your wife is a vampire?
Yes.
Well, that makes it convenient, I guess. Did you meet at a vampire gathering of some sort, or?
Oh, no, I met her at a club, and I knew from the moment I saw her that I had known her before, and that was... In fact, the case, we had incarnated into this life to meet each other.
It's like you saw her and saw red.
Yes.
mm-hmm. yes. Yeah. Do you think that, so you then do think that we are mortal beings, that even your vampire-lusting body will pass away in the normal human lifespan, or do you think, is there some reason to believe that the ingestion of blood... And whatever all will bring some kind of immortality to you, that you will live a longer natural lifespan?
I would like to think so. I know that my human body will die, but why I'm here now,
yes.
there are certain things that I can aspire to in my vampire mind.
Like what?
Well, for example, in July, I'm going to be trying an experiment.
Oh?
Where I'll be buried in the ground.
Yes.
In my casket.
That sounds serious.
For 3 days and three nights. Nothing more.
3 days and three nights. Oh, Morgan.
Nothing more than an oxygen tube.
Oh, really?
That
I mean,
be...
they're going to actually dig a hole,
yes.
throw the dirt on top of your casket with
yes.
nothing more than a little tube?
Mm-hmm. 3 days and three nights.
And what is it that you are going to... I mean, what's the point?
I will be spending that time trying to develop inner... abilities inside myself to enlighten my senses. I would someday like to know how to levitate, and that's one method I'm going to try to help achieve that.
Huh.
And human invisibility. I would like to master that.
You would like to be invisible. Mm-hmm. I can see how a vampire would certainly mm-hmm. consider that would have its advantages.
And it is believed that to be in the earth
yes.
for some time.
Yes.
Would help to get me to that point.
You've considered the dangers involved. How far down are you going to be buried?
Roughly, we're going to dig a hole that's going to be 5 feet deep.
That's pretty deep.
Mm-hmm.
Not the traditional six, but pretty deep.
And I'll be prepared for that time.
Are you going to take your normal casket with you, or is it going to be a special affair?
No, I'm going to buy a different one.
You're going to buy a special casket for
Yes,
this?
Yes. Uh-huh. I have two caskets in the home, and they're very beautiful, and I wouldn't want to get them dirty.
Oh, that would be one for you and...
One for my wife, yeah.
One for your wife. Mm-hmm. So, once again, your wife is also a vampire.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Morgan, hold on. I'm sure they'll have questions for you out there. I certainly have many more. So she's a vampire, too. Huh. One possible path, perhaps, to everlasting, truly everlasting love.
This part of the show, listen online with Streamlink. Log on to coasttocoastam.com. Talk with Art Bell. Call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Even though I've been having a little fun with Morgan, to read from his email again, a blood-drinking, casket-sleeping vampire. And, you know, in the first half hour of calling Morgan, I began to get the idea that no, Morgan isn't kidding. He really is this. He's got plans to be buried 5 feet down with a little straw going up to take air so he can really get the feel of the dirt. Anyway, Morgan's a vampire, and we'll be right back with him. Once again, Morgan. All right, Morgan.
Yes.
Well, first of all, before we dive into the phones here, there are a lot of people who have questions for you, obviously.
I'm sure.
Sure. You know, is there anything about vampirism that we haven't covered that people should know that's important?
I would just advise people to be very careful.
Oh?
When they meet someone who claims to be a vampire,
don't
jump into anything.
Well, right, but why do you say that? I mean...
There are a lot of psychotic people in the world that will take advantage of you.
And that,
you
that,
need to be
that,
very careful.
That wouldn't be you.
No.
So there's some troubled portion of the vampire world.
Yeah, it's a small segment of teens, mostly teens.
Always. A few bad apples, huh?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, are you, the one thing I guess I want to know, and really everybody else listening would want to know, You really are claiming that there are thousands of vampires, literally thousands in some cities.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That's pretty hard to buy.
Well, you could look on the internet, I suppose, if you really wanted to find out more information.
You know, I never thought of that. Go to like Google and Google vampires.
Yes, there are churches in New York City, temples in, there's one in Seattle. We have them. They're growing.
You know, I think I believe you. I really do. I think that that it may be so, and that's going to concern a lot of people. All right, a few questions from the audience. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Morgan the Vampire.
Yes, hi. My name's David. I'm calling from New Jersey.
Hey, David.
And I'd like to know, is it true that vampires fear garlic?
Oh, yeah.
I do personally do not like garlic. I don't eat it. I have nothing to do with it. I would not allow it in my house.
Oh, really?
Okay. And that's also my personal preference. It makes me very ill. I'll break out in a rash.
Oh, do you hear that?
Break out in a rash, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it breaks out in a rash.
Also, is there a cure for the bloodlust?
Oh, yeah.
None that I know of. And I don't know that I would want one.
In other words, you're happy.
Yes. Yes.
I thought that would be your answer.
You did? Well, you. So what do you think? Is this a real McCoy we've got here calling?
Yeah, he sounds genuine.
Yeah.
Well, I am.
He does to me, too. All right. I very much appreciate your call and your question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Yeah. I began to realize, I mean, you never know, see, when you get an email like this, whether you're going to get the real McCoy or whether you're going to get, you know, somebody yanking on your leg. But you really do seem...
Yes. There's some people who question the whole thing, but to me it's a lifestyle. It's a way of a life. I've become this, and I enjoy it. We all do.
Well, we all, not all of us do.
No. Those who are born...
Oh, you mean of vampires?
Yes, yes.
Oh, my God. I did just Google vampire, and the links are absolutely endless.
Mm-hmm.
Endless. I had no idea. I truly had no idea. I never took a look at Google and vampires before. Holy. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Morgan. Hello.
Me?
Yes, you.
First, I want to go by my screen name on the screen link. Is that okay?
Well, sure.
Illuminati Resistance.
Okay.
And I have a question. Have you or any of your...
Is that like a first name and a last name? Illuminati and then Resistance is your last name, or is that just a full handle?
Handle.
I see. That's a lot to say all at once. All right.
Have you encountered any vampire hunters?
Oh.
I've been warned of them, and I have heard of them, and I've certainly researched them.
Now, why do you say that, sir? You say that like you might either be or know about vampire hunters.
And can silver actually kill vampires, like, or is it just, like, werewolf or any of that?
Would a real vampire hunter ask that? Are you a vampire hunter?
No,
no,
I'm
okay.
A little Illuminati resistant.
Oh, yeah, well, I got that. All right, so silver.
Silver's no problem.
There was wasn't there something about a silver bullet?
And that would kill me.
Oh, a silver bullet would, well, probably a lead one would, too.
Mm-hmm. It would kill my human body, but my vampire soul
would live on.
Yes.
But see, that's not altogether different than other people believe. They just, it sounds like, is vampirism a religion? Is it fair to call it a religion?
Yes.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
And in that religion, what is worshipped? Is it a deity, or is it...
We worship one another.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, and we worship our undead gods.
Undead gods.
Mm-hmm. The people, the vampires that have been here before,
mm-hmm.
that have passed on,
yes.
who speak to us and channel to us.
Channeling.
We worship them.
I'm kind of down on channeling. I don't know why. It seems to me that channeling, I don't know, just so would be so easy to fake it. I was never much of a channel person.
Mm-hmm.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Morgan.
Is that me?
That's you.
Yes, I was wondering why you would have to have an oxygen tube.
To breathe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Morgan?
I couldn't hear the question.
Well, he was asking why you would need an oxygen tube at all. In other words, he's thinking that being the vampire you claim you are, that you wouldn't need oxygen. Is that right, caller?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
I will need oxygen to breathe. I will be slowing my body down while I'm in the ground.
Yes.
So I will not be a rapid heartbeat, and I'll be very meditative.
Well, it's going to be kind of like a sensory deprivation chamber, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, something? Very much so. But it's vital for me to be in the earth.
Is this something that all vampires eventually get to somehow, or is this just something you are doing?
Oh, many do this. Many do this. Yes. I'm not the only one.
That's amazing. It's really amazing. So there's like this whole world out there that I don't know anything about.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
you're learning now.
I guess I am. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Morgan the Vampire.
Hey, this is Kurt in Phoenix. How
Hello.
You doing?
Hi, Kurt.
I'm on one of these stupid cell phones, sorry.
It's okay, we'll bear with it.
All right. Vampire man, do you believe in God or Jesus? And what do you think they think about all this?
Or when he said all that, did you just drop the phone?
I'm sorry?
No, I'm talking to Morgan here.
I believe in God.
You believe in God?
Yes, I do. And the devil.
He thinks about you drinking blood and stuff, all this.
He couldn't be that. He couldn't be that. Well, I don't know. You wouldn't think he'd be that happy about it, though.
Yeah. Do you worry about going to hell?
Oh, yeah. There's another good one.
No, I don't worry about going to hell.
Why not?
I'm not sure that it would be a bad place to be.
Hell?
Yes.
Well,
as defined by the Christian Bible.
Well, really, what do you imagine hell might be, Morgan?
It would not be as in the Christian Bible.
You don't think there'd be,
No.
Pitchforks and fire and brimstone and all the traditional hell accoutrements?
No.
Huh. Hi there. One more, Morgan, very quickly. You're on the air with Morgan. Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
Hello, Mark?
Yes, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my name's Kenny.
Kenny?
Yeah, and I'm calling from Clarksville, Indiana.
And, Kenny, what's up?
I just want to know if it's, he says he stays in during the day, and he's all proud. He prowls through the night, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, and you live on blood alone?
No. I eat food.
Now, do you take blood or drink blood just as a dietary supplement, or is it a important?
Blood is spiritual, and it's necessary. Without it, if I go more than a week, or if any of us go more than a week, we become very irritable.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then that sounds almost like a narcotic, where
very much so. It could be looked at that way.
Hooked on blood.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
It's a very beautiful thing.
When you have it.
Mm-hmm.
Is blood at times, I mean, does it, sort of dry up? I mean, your connections for blood not be available at the right time, or what?
Yes, that can happen. And there have been times when vampires have gone and hurt people who didn't want to be involved in this.
Is this the dark side, the deadly side that you also included, when you sent me the email, you talked about a deadly serious side. What is the deadly serious side?
For us, it would be the law.
Yeah, well, for many.
Mm-hmm. But we really try not to break any laws.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few sometimes that do.
So.
And we've read about those in the newspaper. They give us all a bad name.
There's always a few bad apples. I guess even with vampirism, huh? All right. Well, it's interesting to see what the reaction of the audience is like. The first-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, I'm friends with Morgan, the vampire.
Oh?
I actually know him, and...
Yeah, your accents sound somewhat similar, actually. So you really know
what
him?
What is your name?
Jason. I'm friends with Nathan and Adam, your sons.
Hmm. Hello.
Okay, one thing is turn your radio off.
Turn that radio off,
yes.
Kevin.
Turn, Kevin, yes. So you know Morgan, huh?
Yes, I know both of his sons. Oh. And I can verify he is a vampire. I have seen the coffins, I have seen the fangs, and all that stuff.
You're not a vampire, though?
No, not a vampire.
Okay, so you know Morgan. You know Morgan. Do you recognize this person?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
so you're verifying he's a vampire.
Yes.
Did he like tell you this, or did you just realize, holy smokes, Morgan's a vampire?
Well, you know, he's discussed it with me, and I've seen his fangs, and I've seen the coffins by going and visiting my friends, and I've asked him stuff about it. It's kind of interesting and cool.
So you have no problem with it?
No.
Haven't you ever felt like sort of, I don't know, guarding your neck or something?
No.
When you're around him?
No. Never felt threatened. Never, you know, felt any kind of, you know, threat from Morgan. He's a cool dude. And, you know, I don't think he would, you know, do anything without asking or, you know, like you said, the blood circle and all that stuff, you know.
I appreciate your call, and I'm sure Morgan appreciates the support.
Thank you, Jason.
All right, so there you are, neighbor or close friend of a vampire. Ha! Oh, my wild card line, you're on the air with Morgan the Vampire. Hello. Hello. Going once, going twice, gone. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Morgan. Hello.
Hey, how you doing, Art?
Pretty well, sir.
Hey, hello. Hey, good morning, Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering, this is Jazz Cat in the Yahoo chat room. I was just wondering, Morgan, do you shop at Hot Topic?
No.
What is that, some kind of plug? That's a plug, huh?
No.
Do you have a serious question? Come on, we got a vampire here. You don't get a chance to ask a vampire question every
no.
day.
Okay. No, that's it.
That's it, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Just a plug. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Morgan the Vampire. Hello.
Hi. This is Fred.
Hey, Fred.
From Centerville. I was just wondering, like, does it have to be the blood of humans, or can it be, like, blood of animals?
That's a really good question. Too good a question.
Mm-hmm. And blood from an animal will suffice with nothing else available. Okay. But it will not do the trick, ultimately. Once you've had the taste of blood in your system, you need human blood.
Oh, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Did you catch that, caller?
Yeah. Okay.
Interested?
Oh, I don't think I am up for any donations.
No, huh? All right, well...
Wait, I have another question.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, like, what if the person's whose blood you're getting takes, like, medication, and there's medication in their blood? Stream.
Never thought of that.
That affected.
We're very careful, and we screen our donors, so to make sure that that is not a problem.
They practice safe vampirism.
Mm-hmm.
He wants that known. All right.
Okay.
All right. There you are. First time caller line. You are on the air with Morgan.
Hey, Art. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. I have a question for Morgan. How you doing, Morgan?
Fine.
I have a friend who's a werewolf, and I'm familiar with some of the circles that you guys run in. And I have a question. First of all, do you ever worry about blood-borne viruses like AIDS? I mean, the Chinese drink duck blood as part of their daily diet, and they have the bird flu stuff over there. So do you worry about that or what?
Yes, we do. And I worry very much about that, and I'm very careful, as I told you earlier, to make sure that would not be a problem.
How do you test the blood?
We have a nurse in our circle.
Okay.
And we screen the blood.
Okay, and this is a common thing, Art. It's been going on for centuries. I mean, vampirism is bigger than you think. Just go on the internet and you'll see what I mean.
Well, I did. I went and hit Google with vampire, and it was just unending. So I do admit, I'm actually admitting I'm blown away. And were you the one who said you had a friend who's a...
Werewolf.
Really?
Yeah, they have what they call, they have role-playing groups all over the country, but a lot of these guys in the role-playing groups are actually vampires and werewolves. They actually are. They're not just pretending. They really are.
Do vampires find things in common, Morgan, with werewolves and other alternative lifestyles?
Yes, there are some people who we've run across who on a full moon.
Yes.
Very much so they become like a werewolf. And we will at times share blood with them.
That's scary. But caller, you're saying it's really right, huh?
I believe it because the guy I know is a mathematician. I won't mention his name. But,
no, thank you. Don't.
But he is a very intelligent guy, and, you know, I've never seen him transform, but I really believe it because he believes it. So, you know, that's the best I can tell you.
So he claims that kind of in the middle of the night he transforms into a wolf.
Absolutely. There's a whole culture. They have rules. I mean, they have, mm-hmm. like, a whole doctrine surrounding all this stuff.
Yes, and if we can help those people who have that werewolf feeling by donating blood to them to stop them from hurting someone, yeah. we'll be more than happy to do that.
Okay. Are you saying that werewolves, from the public's point of view, might be more of a danger than vampires?
I would think so, yes. Yes.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Vampirism is becoming very organized and very structured. It's coming together in a very good way.
Well, on the off chance that somebody out there just realized the lust is theirs, I mean, how do they go about it? How would anybody go about finding other vampires? You know, I guess what? In today's modern world, what am I saying? There's the internet.
Well, there's nightclubs. And it's just, you know where to go. It's just an inner feeling. If you have it, they will find you.
So, vampires have social lives. They go to nightclubs.
Mm-hmm.
They go up to chicks and give them lines like, well, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
At the critical moment, hey, baby, want to make a donation? What?
No, you might start the conversation by talking about anything.
Well, what about those big teeth of yours?
Well, those that are receptive to me, since I'm married, but someone who would be receptive.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
You know,
it's
not a problem if they like that,
mm-hmm.
and they're drawn to it.
Morgan, we're out of time.
Mm-hmm.
Brother, it has been unusual, and I really appreciate your coming on the air. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Good night.
Thank you, and good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Truly, only in America. Grow up and get the lust.
Sleep the pauper and wake up a millionaire.
In America. We'll be back and we'll talk about out of body experiences from the high desert in the middle of the night. That's right, the middle of the night. This is Coast to Coast AM.
The official website of Coast to Coast AM is www.coasttocoastam.com. With Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is indeed, and it is the weekend, a Saturday night at that. I hope everybody is well. This is going to be extremely interesting. Vampires. Wow. Coming up, William Buhlman, who happens to be America's leading expert on out-of-body experiences. That's right. The author's 30 years of extensive personal out-of-body explorations give him a unique and thought-provoking insight into this subject. This is real stuff, folks. I had one I know. During the last 8 years, he's conducted an international out-of-body experience survey that includes over 16,000 participants from 32 countries. The provocative results of this survey are presented in his latest book, The Secret of the Soul. The Secret of the Soul. That's a good title. As a certified hypnotherapist, William incorporates various methods, including hypnosis, visualization, meditation techniques in his workshops to explore the profound nature of out-of-body experiences and the benefits of accelerated personal development through lectures, workshops, and in his books. The author teaches the preparation and techniques of authentic spiritual exploration. It is possible to leave your body. Let me say that again. It is possible to leave your body. I did it once, uninvited, unexpected, maybe even unwelcome, although certain aspects of it were very pleasurable and wonderful, but I don't think I would want to repeat it, and I have certainly never attempted to repeat it. If you're curious what this is, and I imagine a lot of you are, I know that a lot of you know a lot about this particular subject, and a lot of you don't know a darn thing about it, so we'll of course cover some of the basics, and then I guess some of the more exotic stuff involving out-of-body experiences coming up. This will seem positively tame compared to interviewing a vampire. William, welcome to the show.
Hello, Art. It's a pleasure to talk to you again.
It's nice to have you back. Can you imagine in your wildest dreams that across the country there are thousands and thousands of vampires and werewolves and things that we think are, you know, myth and movie, right? But then, really these people who think they're vampires and all the rest of it all across America, do you think that could be true?
I don't doubt anything.
Yeah, I've come to the same point. Yeah, I've come to the same point where, like, nothing shocks me anymore.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
What the heck? It's America. All right, so let's talk about something I do know is real, and that's out-of-body experiences. I guess the best way to begin would be for you... Well, let's see. Describe what it is. What is an out... To most people, they laugh. What are you talking about, out-of-body experience? Yeah, when you die, they think.
Yeah, there's a real misconception out there about what it is. It's really the separation of consciousness from the body. And it happens all the time, all across the world.
Is consciousness our soul?
I think soul is an aspect of consciousness. I think consciousness is a multidimensional continuum that is quite expansive. Soul is part of that.
The soul is part of it. The soul is part of consciousness. So the larger...
In other words, it's the source of consciousness.
Okay.
But not consciousness necessarily thereof.
All right. Then when you do have an out-of-body experience, your soul is not leaving your body.
Generally not. That's one of the biggest misconceptions, because we live under a real limited viewpoint of the universe and ourselves. You know, we've kind of bought into this fairy tale that we are made up of two bodies, body and spirit. And of course, those of us who have out-of-body experiences know that the universe is much more complex.
There's a certain relationship between OBEs or out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences, right?
Oh, yeah. There is a direct... an OBE is part of the elements involved in a near-death experience.
It is.
But it's only one element of it.
When somebody has a near-death experience, do you think that more than just consciousness has left the body temporarily? I mean, you get all the millions of stories of people on the operating room ceiling, that kind of thing. Has the soul, in that case, left the body?
I think it's the mind and the astral body has separated from.
I know I'm asking you terribly hard questions. It's hard to get answers for this stuff, but.
Well, I think it's the real separation is really the astral body, the emotional body has separated. And most people identify with that as being their self. So they just assume that the soul has left the body. But the bottom line is there's a big difference between a near-death experience and an out-of-body experience. Out-of-body experiences are much more prevalent because they occur spontaneously during sleep. And, you know, of course, you don't have to die.
Right. That's a good point, of course. You don't have to die. But still, you know, I'm going to do what I'm forced to do because I have to relate to my own experience. This has happened to me, as you know.
Yeah.
We've talked about it in previous shows. But boy, I'll tell you what, William, when it happened, I wasn't meditating. I wasn't wishing anything on myself. I wasn't thinking that I'd want to have an out-of-body experience. It was the furthest thing from my mind, and it just happened. Boom! It just happened like that.
I know. It's wild. That's what happens to millions and millions of people around the world every single day. And they don't, it's not self-initiated.
That doesn't happen to me every day.
No, but...
You're saying it happens to millions.
It happens to millions of people every day. I get incredible feedback people from all over the world.
Well, that's why this is such a hot topic, because this does happen to people. It really does happen to people. And I would imagine, what percentage of people, William, do you think that this happens to... don't have the slightest doggone idea what an OBE is, don't listen to Coast to Coast AM or any other show like it, they have no idea what just happened to them.
Oh, that's the problem, Mark. Most people that have these experiences don't have a clue, and they don't have any accurate information, so they fluff it off.
I mean, a lot of people would think, what, did I just have a heart attack or a stroke or something like that, or because it's pretty dramatic when it happens.
It absolutely is, but most people don't have a context to put it in, so they have a hard time.
True.
I mean, you know, we've talked about this in the past. Some people think it's an alien abduction.
Yeah.
Because that's their frame of reference on this topic. Some people, I've had letters from people that think that the devil is taking them away, and it all depends on your frame of reference, and unfortunately, our society is not well educated on this universal topic. It isn't really into just this last 10 years that people really started to talk about this subject openly.
Well, you're right about one thing. It is universal. So all of us, when did the awareness of OBEs break from a sort of individual observation to people writing books, people beginning to realize, holy smokes, this really can happen. You really can leave your body. When did it, it's still not mainstream, so I can't say when did it go mainstream, but I mean, when did it sort of congeal into the world talking about it?
I think that began with Moody's work that come out, Life After Life, with his near-death work, where he talks about, he actually coined the word out of body. In that book, which was published, I believe, in 1972.
Dr. Raymond Moody.
Yes, who's a wonderful man, and he did a great service to humanity by breaking the mold and starting to talk about these subjects. And he brought a lot of credibility to the topic because he was a physician. And people started to take this stuff seriously. And then from then on, there was quite a few books, including my own, come out in 96, which, thank goodness, now it did well and is in 8 languages.
Okay, so this is a... Still, though, it's a relatively new, recognized phenomena. Is that fair to say?
It is. It's really about 20 years, or 20 to 30 years old, that it's in, really in the last 10, though, I would say, it's really become mainstream, where you see bumper stickers and T-shirts and stuff like that out there. And
do you really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're out there. It's kind of surprising. I was in Vegas doing a workshop, and somebody had a, you know, don't bother me. They were sitting at the casino playing cards. And I couldn't believe it. On the T-shirt on the back, it said, don't bug me. I'm having an OBE. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Yeah, well, a lot of people leave the bodies temporarily in Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's true.
Since there will be a lot of people who will not know what we really are talking about, you may have had the beginnings of an OBE, folks. Even if you didn't have a full one, you may have had the beginnings. In fact, I think almost everybody has had the beginnings of an OBE. What does it feel like when you start to have one?
Well, that's one of the things I did my survey on. I was fascinated with the what were the common phenomena associated with it.
Oh, all right. And, tell them about your survey, I guess. How many people did you, may I ask, for
the
survey?
Well, sure, yeah. The survey, I started it. It was, of course, published in my first book, and then I put it on my website,
yes,
which is linked to yours.
Yes.
And I thought maybe a couple hundred people would respond, and lo and behold, I had over 16,000 people responded in the last few years.
So this is on your website? The survey can be taken on
your website? Yes, I invite all the listeners out there to come to my website and participate in the survey. It only takes a minute.
Listen, folks, and what you're about to hear, and there's a lot of information you're going to get tonight based on this survey, is from 16,185 people, right?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, the number is much greater than that now, but that's what the survey results was based on.
All right. So then let's describe it. And you can use some of the survey numbers as you describe it. But
absolutely. I think people would be surprised. Number one is, while this is often, OBEs occur often spontaneously during sleep. Let me preface that so people have an idea what we're talking about.
Do they ever occur when you're awake?
They can, but they're much less frequent.
Okay.
I don't know the exact percentage, but I would say high 90, certainly 95 to 98% of people, they are asleep.
All right.
Or on the verge of sleep.
Well, that was my next question. When you say sleep, do you mean the little twilight zone between this world and that?
What happens to sleep? Generally, that's the case. It's called the hypnagogic state.
Right.
Which is that in-between state.
Every now and then, and I'm sure this is true of everybody, as you approach sleep, you can actually feel yourself come in and out of it a couple of times, and then boom, you're gone.
Right. You know, no one knows what sleep is.
Think about it.
Science does not know what a dream is, and we really don't know what sleep. What happens when we sleep for a third of our lives? No one really truly knows.
You're right. We don't.
And think about that. This impacts all the listeners out there.
How much scientific? I know there's been some sleep research, right?
Oh, absolutely. We know there's REM states. We know that there's changes that occur. But the point is, nobody has a video of what occurs to consciousness when we go into this strange altered state, because that's what sleep is,
uh-huh,
an altered state of consciousness.
It is, yes.
What happens? What is a dream? Is a dream, are we touching some form of reality, made up?
When you're asleep, is it the absence of consciousness? Could it be described as an absence of consciousness?
I think it's a shift of consciousness.
That's
how I feel today. After all of my research and my experiences with this, we shift our consciousness into another, for lack of another the word is energy body.
I don't even know how common people are, but I'll tell you something, William. Most nights, this is the truth, from the time I finally hit sleep until I wake up the next morning, there is the great nothing. Nothing. Dead nothing. Now, occasionally, of course, I have a dream. I can have nightmares. I've had, but you know what? The majority of the time, it's just like goodbye, and then, you know, it's the next day.
Well, you've went into a very deep state. A lot of people are like that. You asked me a little bit earlier about what do people experience.
Yes.
And I'd like to briefly go over that because I think your listeners may identify with all of this.
All right, the beginning of an OBE.
Yeah, the beginning of an OBE is number one, is energy sensations. Sleep paralysis is 72% of people in the survey reported sleep paralysis, which I'm sure a large percentage, by that I mean your consciousness is awake or at some point, but you can't move your body.
Right.
And it's quite shocking to people. It's one of the scariest sensations that people can have.
Actually, it is. If you become conscious enough to be aware of the fact that you are frozen, it's frightening, of course.
And that is one that especially scares children, but everyone. I mean, you can't control it, and that's one thing that everyone fears, is that sense of having no control, but yet you're fully aware. The other one that's very prevalent, 85% of people reported buzzing, humming, and roaring sounds.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, an unusual sound while you're asleep.
Yes.
And it can be very metallic sounding. And again, I like to connect this to the alien abduction phenomena. That's the same kind of phenomena that's reported during so-called abductions.
Do you believe they actually are connected in more than just the ways you're describing? I mean, have people hit you with that question?
Oh, I get hit with that all the time. I've spoken at, 10 UFO conferences. I do an hour and a half lecture just on that connection. So, yes, I think it's a serious connection because it's a multidimensional continuum that we live in, and I think alien experiences and OBEs are multidimensional experiences. So the two tie together. I mean, they're so much in sync with one another. Anyway, getting to the list, the next one that many people experience is a feeling of being lifted or floating or sinking.
Yes.
Very common.
Yep. I've had all these.
And, of course, any sensation of being touched or a feeling that someone is in the bed, and I know I get so many letters about this from people, it feels like you swear someone is, let's say you're in bed by yourself, but you feel the presence of someone.
Yes.
That's another phenomenon, very common, hearing voices. I know I've had this on many occasions where I hear it sounds like my mother's voice calling me. Just my name.
Huh.
I've had, hundreds and hundreds of people have written to me about this in detail. But all these things are very common experiences for people that are, just to clarify this, this is the different kinds of phenomena that are the onset and aftermath that people experience of an OBE.
You could say precursor.
Especially paralysis and buzzing, humming sounds and high energy.
But the great majority of the time, these things, even though a lot of us have experienced them, they don't progress into a real full-fledged OBE, do they?
No, because of fear. People start to freak out.
Yeah, it's the onset of it beginning to happen, and what stops this is you.
Oh, absolutely. People begin, I can relate because these experiences have scared me on more than one occasion, especially when you don't know what's happening.
Yes.
I mean, it's terrifying when you have no knowledge about this and suddenly you feel like you're totally out of control.
Exactly. And if you think that's something, when a real OBE grabs you and takes hold and you leave your body, you actually leave your body, well, then it's not so bad. That's the good part, actually. But that stuff that comes just before it, it's like a warning. You would not feel good. You'd not feel comfortable. You'd not like it. You'd say, hey, I want this to stop.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.
Inside the room so much. The sight of a touch or the scent of a sound or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories all. And the youth
want to take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
And this is one ride you can take. Now, this is for real, folks. You really can do this. It takes an awful lot of will, and it takes actually courage that I've never developed. I've been right up to the edge, and I had one real one, but I have no control over that one. In terms of allowing it to go and really taking that ride, I have never, ever volunteered. Not yet. I may give it a try, but I never have. If you listen tonight, you'll find out how you can do it, and then when the time comes, if you can muster up the correct body parts, you can do it. You can really take a ride. You can go outside your body. Where? Oh, we'll talk about where you can go. It's absolutely remarkable. I have, of course, a computer at my side, and people can fast blast me questions from the website, coasttocoastam.com. And man, that thing is filling up with hundreds already, just literally hundreds of people reporting the things that we're talking about right now. That's how common it is. Every phone line is lit up and singing a song. We'll get to that later, folks, so, you know, mellow out there. But what I'm trying to tell you is that this is so common, so underreported, so universal, that it, when you talk about it, everything starts going berserk if you do a radio program like this with William Buhlman. So that's how common it is, William. It's incredible. But these first things that you talked about, these vibrations, these this paralysis, all the rest of it, the noise that you might experience, all of this is highly unpleasant. Most of the time, I mean, it's something you don't want anything to do with, and you force yourself awake a lot of times just to stop it, right?
Well, yeah, to a point, and to you get used to it. That's one of the things I train people to do in my workshops, is to condition themselves to adapt to it, so that they can use the precursor, the sounds, as almost like a launching pad.
Yes.
In other words, they're not really, they're actually very neutral. They're wonderful experiences once you know what they are and you surrender to them. The key is to surrender instead of freaking out.
Well, that's the key, and that's the stumbling block.
It sure is, and that's the block that many people have in this topic. But the bottom line is, everybody listening in your audience is going to have an OBE. There's no escaping. We all will leave our body, so it's about time that we start to learn about it.
Well, now, wait a minute. Are you including death?
Oh, well, what else is death
okay,
but just a permanent OBE?
Right, you are. But, I mean, aside or prior to death, what...
Everybody, Art, has OBEs as they sleep. They just don't remember them. They block them.
Really?
Absolutely. I have seen it enough during out-of-body experiences. Matter of fact, many people, when they sleep, they'll separate and they hover. In other words, it's what many people call their astral body is floating just out of sync with their physical body. I'm not mean up at the ceiling or anything, but maybe 3 or 4 inches just floating.
Well, then, how do you figure what happened to me? I hate people who tell stories, and I've told this before, but there's a big audience that's never heard it. I was in Paris lying in bed. We were on vacation. I was with my wife. Everything was great, spiffy. I was trying to fall asleep or asleep. I don't know which. I can't even remember now. And it happened in a flash, William, in an unmeasurable amount of time. Nobody could measure the time. And I was suddenly up out of my body, over the city of Paris, I was in this instant world of the most pleasurable, ecstatic, all-comprehending, wonderful place that I'd ever been in my whole life. It was, words just can't describe what I felt. And then, bang, it ended, and I was back in my body and shocked and waking my wife up and driving her nuts saying, oh, you wouldn't believe what just happened to me. And that's the only time it's ever happened.
And you know, you just described what has happened to millions of people around the world. Because it's often just a totally spontaneous event, and bang, you're floating up into the sky or at your ceiling or just floating out of your body somewhere. And most of the people that, according to the survey, most of the people found it to be an incredibly enjoyable experience. Now, not all, but just like it's a remarkable experience, and it changes people's lives, because I've received many a letter from an atheist that has told me that they are no longer an atheist after an OBE. It's like the old foxhole story.
I guess people would have different reactions, right? But that I came away with some great new understanding of God.
But don't you think you continue now after your body's gone? If you can float up into the sky
and leave your body, and leave your body. But, well,
do you provide evidence that you continue beyond the body?
It provides anecdotal evidence for me. If you're asking me, I'll tell you why. Because to me, it's something that happens, but it's something that happens so far to a living, albeit perhaps sleeping, human body. Living is the key word there, living.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, we may have powers of the mind that we just don't even begin to guess about yet. You said it yourself, we don't know anything about sleep, we don't know anything about our brains, not a damn thing, really, just very surface stuff. We know so little. So a living human brain, could it do that? Well, yes, maybe. Does that mean the same thing about death? Then there's all the OBE things out there. So I don't know.
Well, many people feel that gives them a verification, including myself. I've had hundreds of OBEs, and it's always a constant verification to me of my immortality. But more importantly,
answers. What is it about that gives you absolute verification of immortality? I mean, that's a really strong...
Oh, I know it's strong, because I know that I can consciously direct... Now, I'm talking specifically about self-initiated experiences. Now, the very nature of a spontaneous, because I've had many spontaneous, but as you know, my books and my workshops are devoted to self-initiating the experience. And when you self-initiate the experience, you have much more control, because you're expecting it, you're trained. In other words, you don't flip out. And because of that mindset, you can really, for lack of a better word, take advantage of it and really gain knowledge. You can actually, let's just say, prolong the experience.
Let's say that you learn how to do it competently and at will, almost. Something I'm nowhere near. But if I could get there, and if people in the audience could get there, what could they do? In other words, once you are a practitioner of OBEs on a regular basis, let's say, Where can you go? What experiences can you have?
Oh, it's mind-boggling. There's the big thing is you can obtain answers to the big questions. What are you? Where did you come from? Where are you going? What is your purpose? Those four big questions, I think, are number one.
Those are pretty big questions.
Yes, they are. I mean, in other words, one thing I learned very quickly is that I realized immediately that I had past lives as a German tank commander and that I had died in World War II. And it was very clear to me. It wasn't any theoretical hocus-pocus. I knew for a fact that I was a German officer during World War II, and I died on the Russian front.
You knew all this. You knew all this. How?
Because you're interacting. Remember, when you leave your body, you're going inward. We are non-physical beings. Consciousness is non-physical. I think everybody in the audience would agree. Consciousness is not a physical thing.
Yes, I agree.
It's certainly not a 3-pound mass of cells.
Right.
It's something more. But the problem is science can't touch it. They can't analyze it.
Right.
When you have an OBE, you're going inward into the universe and experiencing higher aspects of yourself. And when you do that, you obtain information and knowledge that is really unexplainable by our linear thought. But
well, what
just
if I
obtain insights
all right,
that you know are true?
Slow up, William. What if I were to ask you to answer? I mean, you're telling me that you can answer those questions. You've obviously asked. I don't know the answer to those questions. Would you like to actually try to answer a few of them based on knowledge gained with OBEs?
Well, number one, I know for a fact that I am pure consciousness without a body. I know from prolonging. Let me share a little story. As I prolong my OBEs, my humanoid form dissolves away. And I've done this many, many times. In other words, even most of our self-concepts are totally incorrect because we're programmed to believe that we're physical beings.
Do you have, this has always been of interest to me, one can do actual travel while out of the body. You can actually pick your destinations, and right?
Absolutely. If you wish, you can absolutely pick a destination. Or you can visit people.
Once out of the body, do you feel any physical identity at all? Or is that just all gone?
It depends on your state of consciousness. I'm not trying to sidestep the question. We are multidimensional beings. The universe, one of the things I know from out-of-body exploration is that the universe is multidimensional continuum. And that the physical world is like the epidermis layer.
Mm-hmm.
When you leave your body, you're actually going inward into the subtle substructure of matter. And, of course, this is where everyone goes when they die. Heaven, this whole term of heaven is nothing more than just a crude biblical phrase denoting this multidimensional continuum. And no one really dies, they just shed the outer body and move to the inner world. Or when worlds, actually, there's many, many countless worlds.
So without...
And they're maintained and created by thought.
Okay, well, here's a big one for me then. Are you saying that when we die, our consciousness, as we understand it now, remains intact?
More or less, I'm not saying that the ego, per se, but more the core of our consciousness will continue.
Huh.
And I know that's for many people that's shocking.
Well, okay. Try and put words to it. Here I sit, right? Table here, radio equipment, tape machines, that kind of stuff all around me. When I die, will I have that kind of awareness, or can you put words to what there is left?
There'll still be, you will have an awareness of your beingness, your I-ness. You will still be, and your own self-conception will still be that of your last incarnation. You will still consider yourself Art Bell. Because people continue in the same, it's like when I'm using my own life as an example, but I have thousands of people's letters and the talked to people over the last 10 years
right.
and gathered tremendous feedback from people.
Right.
And many people, one of the first things they do when they have an out-of-body experience is visit a dead loved one, or a dead loved one will visit them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if you're not prepared for that, it's a little bit strange. But what happens is your loved one, and I'm using my mother now as an example, who I've met on multiple occasions, she's in her prime when I see her. By see, I mean perceive, because you don't have, you know, you don't have eyes as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, people continue very much the same as they were. They just take on a, let's just say, the ideal representation of their energy body, because everything is really energy. You know, quantum physics has proven that. Matter really is a misnomer. It doesn't really, there is no such thing as solid. Everything is vibrating. Everything is moving.
These are very hard concepts for us to grasp. Other dimensions, for example, are very hard to grasp. And, of course, current theoretical physicists, very well-respected ones, are saying, you bet we've probably got as many as 11 dimensions. But
absolutely.
But in another dimension, there may not be time as we understand it, the present, the past, the future,
right.
linear time, the way we're so fond of measuring it here, that may not even exist. And so I can't relate then to what that means in terms of what kind of consciousness could be in that environment.
Well, it actually is not as radical. For most people, it's not as radical as a change as you may think, because most people will, let's just say, when they make the transition of death, they will find themselves on, and I hate the word astral, but
that's fine.
Such a common phrase.
Gotta use a word.
It's the astral, what people perceive, or the astral plane, which is the next major dimension parallel to the physical. Now, there's also there's what I call the parallel world, which is a small realm, but most people will end up in the astral dimension, living lives in many respects like they've done in the physical. They will still have form. They will still have a body. It will just be made of a different kind of matter, different kinds of vibrations. But it will still, to them, feel... Remember, reality is relative to the observer.
Mm-hmm.
If you and I were vibrating 100 times faster,
mm-hmm.
and we couldn't tell the difference, from, you know, just like two jet planes going Mach 3 next to one another or standing still.
Mm-hmm.
The same applies in here. Everybody continues, and the vast majority, because of their evolution, will continue on different aspects of the astral plane.
But still, I'm sorry to keep coming back to this question. I only have this frame of reference. I can see things about me. I know I am. I know how I trot through linear measured time. And I can't even reference a self-awareness. A continuance would have to include some continuation of identity, if not ego, certain identity, the self-awareness, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So
you would continue to be Art Bell into your next incarnation. That's the only way I can put it. You would be Art Bell on the astral plane.
Huh.
Way it appears to be. That's based on many, and I'm not just basing this on my observations, but thousands of people.
If then we assume the astral plane is the other side of the place where one resides prior to another incarnation, then just for grins, what about ghosts?
Ghosts are nothing more than, a ghost is nothing more than an energy body, let's just say the astral body that's been slowed down, so that you can see it for a brief period of time. That's all it is. There's no ghosts are such it's almost a funny, I write about this, it's almost silly, because we're surrounded by people all the time that are vibrating just out of sync with us, so we can't see them.
Put another way, you're saying we're surrounded by...
The astral plane is here
and
now.
Around us.
It's not separated.
All around us.
The only thing that separates the astral plane from the physical is a vibration rate of it. What the phenomenon of ghost is nothing more than an individual on the lower aspects, the dense vibrations of the astral plane, actually because they're obsessed with matter, they've lowered their vibration rate for a brief period of time to the point of being observed.
So then what we call the dead are all around us. They really are.
Everything is here and now. Everything. We just can't perceive it with our crude vision and our crude instruments.
Well, that's certainly something to think about. And if that veil was ever removed, then there would be perhaps something as described in the Bible when the dead would rise or something. I don't know. William, hold on. We're at the top of the hour here. This certainly is fascinating stuff, isn't it? William Buhlmann is my guest. We're talking about OBEs or out-of-body experiences, and obviously it's sort of it's leading into some other areas here. Fascinating, though. We'll be right back.
Get it in writing with the After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe by calling 1-888-727-5505. Talk with Art Bell. Call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
If I've been listening to William correctly, and I think I have, he's telling us we really need to redefine everything we think we know about life, death especially, and that... We're simply talking about different vibrational rates, different dimensions, if you prefer. And all of this, all the dead, all of everything that's ever been or ever will be, is all around us in a different state. Something to really think about. We'll be right back. I don't think I over-dramatized that, did I? In other words, you have to sort of... There is no heaven, there is no hell as we think of them, most traditionally. But then there is everything, and it's all around us. That includes the dead, and that includes what was, is, and will be, and in some way that we can't... Well, I guess you might understand. Is that fair?
I think that's a good analogy. I think the most important point that I really like to make is that, you know, you cover a lot of subjects on this show.
That's right.
But when it comes down to it, a lot of these subjects are about belief. This one is not. This is about people having their own experiences. I really tell everyone in workshops and lectures, don't believe what I say or write.
Yeah.
Explore this for yourself and have the experience yourself. Self-initiate the experience.
Here, try this one out, William. During this break, my wife and I were talking, and I remember, I don't know, it was months and a year ago maybe, my wife was driving. We were on the way home, last leg on the way home, and she said, I've got to stop. She put her head down. She said, we got to stop the car for a minute. And she said, did you know that was an OBE? And I said, no. So they can occasionally occur at truly inopportune moments when, you know, when you're in a car or driving or whatever. That's a really bad moment for one of these, but they do happen, don't they?
Absolutely. Yeah, I write about that in one of my books, where a woman actually, she found herself, she was watching herself driving the car as she was floating above her car.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, it's needless to say that's enough to wake you up.
It certainly would. There you are. And I wonder, in such a state, have accidents occurred? I mean, could we imagine that some percentage of the nation's traffic accidents and other accidents occur because of something like this?
I think it could happen. I think much more prevalent, though, is people having experiences. For instance, if you're I've had hundreds of letters from people that are staring at a computer screen, for instance. They're more, and generally they happen when your body's totally inactive.
Well,
I think the whole thing with the driving thing is because it's almost like a road hypnosis.
Well, you know what happens with a computer screen, and this is one byproduct of the modern computer age, we have no doubt about it. You are being subjected to a vibrational flicker rate when you look at a computer screen. You know, when you set up your computer, it'll tell you what the flicker rate is or give you the opportunity to change it. But, baby, you're looking at a flicker rate, and that can do something to your brain, can't it?
Oh, absolutely, because you're not looking at matter. You're looking at electronic impulses, and you're staring at them for hours on end.
In fact, recently, well, I don't know, a year or two ago, there were some Japanese children, maybe even hundreds of them, that were affected in some way by some TV cartoon they broadcast in Japan. It had some flicker rate or flash rate or whatever it was, but it really got... So would that be a way to induce something like this?
Oh, absolutely. There's all really? Kinds of modern methods to induce OBEs. One of them is with... there's companies out there that are making devices that use flickering lights with brain synchronization music to induce altered states of consciousness.
Wouldn't that be along the lines of Dr. Monroe?
It's absolutely directly related. Except in this case, these companies are making these products specifically to induce altered states.
So Dr. Monroe recognized one of the keys to inducing this.
Oh, sound is a very powerful method. I have an entire product line that I've developed with Mach 1 Audio that we've been marketing for years, and we're always trying to tweak it and work on it.
What is it? What does it sound like?
It's it sounds like a kind of like a thumping hum, because it's two sounds. There's approximately a 3.9 hertz difference between the left and right hemispheres of the brain.
Uh-huh.
And you induce a different, let's just say, a different tone in one ear than the other.
Right.
And your brain actually creates the third tone. And I'm using, you know, again, this is non-technical format to explain this. And it alters the brain waves. Just by simply by doing this.
Sounds like a miniature harp.
And in a way, it is like a tuning fork in a way. You have a tuning fork in each ear that's just out of sync.
Well,
and your mind is creating a third, or your brain is creating a third tone.
William, do you know what harp is, actually?
Yes, I do.
One of the claims that they're making with harp is that it could be used as a tactical weapon
right.
to confuse the enemy. And they're talking about using the same kind of frequency ranges that you're talking about right now.
But this is, of course, this is a, you're, We're talking about two different subjects.
In a way.
That's being projected by microwave energy, I believe.
Yes. Buddy.
And what I'm talking about is basically music.
Yes.
It has a whole different function. Now, I don't know much about the HARP project. But I do know a lot about the technology that we've developed, and it's very safe, and it helps people to meditate especially.
All right, let's talk about the safe side of this for a second, because while I certainly know you can leave your body, it doesn't, well, it, you know, there are questions. I mean, reasonable people who have never done this but might be willing to give it a try would have serious questions, and the serious questions would include, is it safe?
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the big questions, and I think my very presence here today is evidence that it is.
Maybe.
My first out-of-body experience was in 1972.
Really?
And I've had them ever since.
How many do you estimate you've done?
I would say probably 500, maybe.
Wow.
And I'm not exaggerating, because a lot of times, you know what happens, and this goes for everyone, when you open the door to the experience, it may take you 30, 60 days to have your first experience. But once you open the door, it's almost like something internally happens that no one can explain. But at that point, you are just open and receptive to have the experiences at any time. Unless you shut down psychologically because of fear, you will just have the experiences.
Well,
a lot of times they're brief. I mean, you know, there could be a few seconds here and there. But the point is, once you're conditioned and open, they just happen.
Do you have any idea, by the way, the actual linear length of an OBE? Has there been any research to date that can identify when an actual OBE has begun with a person in or near the sleep state and has actually measured in linear time how long it went on? Is there any way to do that?
There's been, Stanford University did some research on this subject, and of course, as you know about the Monroe Institute has done work on this. The problem here is that, number one, when you leave your body, time doesn't exist. It just doesn't exist. Time is just a reference point for the decay of matter. And once you leave your body, there's no decaying of matter, so time is irrelevant. And so it's a difficult thing to the experience. I'm not speaking as an experiencer. It sounds strange, but you can live an entire life in 5 minutes of Earth time. And I know it's hard to wrap our minds around.
It absolutely is. It absolutely
is. That's the reality of it, because things happen that are beyond our linear mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yes, there has been research. Unfortunately, there's very little money allocated to this kind of research.
Hey, let me hit you with a doctor. I've got, a million computer messages here, but I've got one from a physician in New Orleans, Louisiana. This should be challenging for you, William. He's explaining away the whole meaning of life through the natural or self-induced dissociative states that are part of human neurochemistry. Though dissociative states are odd experiences, it's absurd to dismiss God and the meaning of life because of this.
And that's a typical feedback that you get from people that have never had the experience themselves. And he's absolutely right. If you look at this objectively, it looks like a dissociative state of consciousness.
Yes.
Which, of course, means it's not valid. That's why it's important. And my best answer to that is, it's important to have the experience yourself. You know, every year in America...
I've got to admit that's true.
You know that from having your own experience.
I absolutely do.
Any doctor, there's probably a million doctors out there would tell you that that was an hallucinatory experience that you had, Mr. Art Bell.
Sure.
But you know it wasn't. You know it was something more than that. You may not be able to explain it, but you know it was something quite different than just an hallucination. And this applies to everyone out there.
All right.
The key is to have the experience. Every year, 7 million people in America have near-death experiences, based on the last research I've seen. It's over 7 million. And out of these 7 million people that are having near-death experiences, you could not in any way, shape, or form convince these people that they're having hallucinations and dissociative issues.
Can I tell you a little story? Maybe sure. You can make some sense out of this. Long, long ago, William, when I was young and pretty stupid, I worked for a rock and roll radio station on the island of Okinawa. I broke a couple of world records there. One of them was I went continuous DJing for 113 hours and 15 minutes. At the time, a record. No sleep during that. That was from Monday, I think it was Monday afternoon through Saturday morning or something like that. It was incredible. I wasn't allowed to use drugs. I had doctors, Japanese doctors, all around me. I kept myself awake by holding frozen cans of orange juice up against my carotid artery and all over my face. You know, they were checking me all the time. No drugs, no coffee. Past a certain point, they made me stop because of my heart rate. But I can't recall. It was the third day or maybe into the fourth day. William, I was, for a long period of time, I went from the world that I was in to some other world that was every bit as real, with drawers and walls, and I was in a house, in a situation, and it was as real as the reality in front of me right now. And finally, somebody shook me hard enough that I came out of this apparent dissociative state. But I must tell you, William, that for the time I was in it, and it was like a long period of time, God, I was in an alternate world, William, with alternate people, in an alternate situation that was every bit as real to touch and smell and be part of as what I'm doing right now. Now, that was some...
Do you feel that that was a dissociative state?
Oh, it was.
Or do you feel that that was another reality you had tapped into?
See, I guess that's what our big argument is about here, right? In other words, we've got the doctor here saying one thing, and you saying something else about the very same experience. He's saying dismiss it because, you know, we know what it is. It's part of what happens to human beings. And then we've got you saying, no. this is like a ticket to ride to what's really out there. And how do we figure out which is...
Well, you know, Art, I think that, leave that up for all the listeners to explore it.
Themselves.
That's what I say. I can't prove this, no more than the doctor can prove his viewpoint.
No.
What I ask people to do is just logically explore it for yourself. If you see techniques, and if you feel inclined to try these techniques, uh-huh. which have been proven over many, many decades to work, try them for yourself. Believe me, back in 72, when I had my first experience, I didn't believe this was true. I was an agnostic that wouldn't have... Somebody told me about this, I would have said they were crazy or smoking pot or something. But I had at least the open mind to try it. And for 30 days, I tried one of the techniques. And that's when I had my first experience. And it changed my entire self-conception.
I'm also getting quite a few messages, William. Let's back up to the pot comment for a second, about ketamine, about some other drugs that are said to assist either OBEs or NDEs or this kind of experience. What's your whole take on the drug angle?
I think it should be naturally induced. And the reason being, and I have experienced... I've been around a while. I've been to Peru. I've studied with shamans.
You've done the drug route, right?
They're called plant medicines.
Whatever.
I've done with shaman. I've done plant medicines that induce altered states.
Well, all right then.
So I'm not a novice.
Is it or is it not? Forgetting about what the right thing to say here is. Is it or is it not a legitimate path to that state of consciousness?
Well, I can say this. Shamans have been taking ayahuasca and other plant medicines for 10,000 years
mm-hmm.
and doing it productively in their own culture. But this is my personal take is that it distorts reality, and I don't recommend it to my students. I don't recommend it to those who attend my workshops.
But the whole thing is a distortion of reality as we feel it now. Anyway,
yeah, you have to be sharp. You have to be on the ball when you start to have these experiences, so you can distinguish. Let's just say thought-created realities from objective realities.
All right.
It takes some training. That's why, of course, I've written two entire books that go into this.
Yes.
This is something, though, that takes the individual to explore and to do the techniques, and then let the listener decide for themselves if it's real. But I can tell it. If you take 30 to 60 days and you do an OBE technique that I write about or techniques that I have available, and most people can have an experience in that time, and then you judge for yourself.
Well, let's tell them. I mean, let's maybe after the break, it's coming up pretty soon. Let's tell them how to do it. You want to do that? I mean, tell them how to do it?
Yeah, that's exactly what I would love to do.
I'd like to do that too. But what about stress? You mentioned in here combat, childbirth, surgery. Moments of certainly intense stress, are they more likely to produce this?
They can, absolutely.
That's a yes, they're more likely to?
Yes, there's many different causes for out-of-body experiences. Childbirth being one, but combat certainly. Any kind of trauma can induce it. Now, that doesn't mean it's not valid just because it's been induced that way. The same applies to a near-death experience in a way. I mean, they're also induced by all kinds of trauma, typically, or heart attacks, or some kind of trauma to the body, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, OBEs are induced by all kinds of methods. The reason I wrote about it is because I was intrigued with the letters that I had received, especially from combat soldiers that were in combat.
You know, I'd like to hear about that, actually. I really would. If you got letters, I've also had emails, William, from people who've been in intense firefights, and man, it reads like the Twilight Zone. I'm telling you, it reads like the Twilight Zone. It's incredible.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's wild stuff.
All right, we're going to touch on that when we get back. William Buhlman is my guest. We're talking about OBEs, out-of-body experiences, and by the way, let's see, his book, Adventures Beyond the Body. And I might add The Secret of the Soul. They're both available if you want to go take a look. I'm Art Bell.
Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Firefights, really scary firefights, and they happen in wars. And we have, unfortunately, a lot of our young people in wars right now. And they write letters about what happens to them. In a moment, we'll ask William what kind of letters he gets. Combat. Yeah, it's like the Twilight Zone. It really is. You've had some letters. What kind of things have you been told by people in combat?
Oh, it's been tremendous. I, matter of fact, I devoted an entire chapter just to this topic in Secret of the Soul. Generally, there were, let's just say, OBEs induced by severe trauma, for instance, mortar attacks.
Sure.
One of them that hits me particularly was it was a platoon that was ambushed in the Delta, and they were hit by a severe attack of mortars, and the entire platoon was decimated. And the bottom line was they were all, I think there was only three survivors, if I remember right from this one story, out of this this company. And the only reason the one survived is that he was knocked back from the blast of, and of course he received shrapnel.
Right.
But he was actually floating above his body, and he watched as the VC come in and stripped his body of his boots and his weapon. And he actually watched it from above, looking down on this whole site. And the only reason he wasn't killed was because they already thought he was dead. And he watched all of his friends having, because I guess the boots were the big thing that they would steal immediately, and then they would take off into the jungle before their, you know, more air power come in.
Yes.
And he wrote me this letter explaining how he was floating above his body, watching himself, his own body, being stripped of his clothes and his boots. And it was only, and he was observed the entire thing, and then he observed where they actually, you know, they melted back into the jungle, and he just barely survived. But I think he was only out of a, I think it was a company, he was only three survivors in this particular attack.
So many things.
That was just kind of an example of the kind of things. Generally, a lot of times they would observe the physical events that were happening around them.
All right. Let's pull back from that, although recognizing it does occur. And if you were to give somebody right now a quick little 101, if you want to have an OBE and you want it to be successful, how do I do it?
Okay. There is a lot of course, as you know, I disclose about 50 different ways. One of the most effective ways is to awaken in the middle of the night. In other words, set your alarm for about 4 hours.
Okay.
Then awaken, and then pick up a book and start, or whatever, but get up, move to another location. For instance, if you're in bed, move to the couch, start maybe read for a few minutes. You know, don't read Stephen King or something. Read about this topic. And then begin a technique, and I'm just going to give you one of many. As you're already, you just woke up, but you're a little bit groggy. You're not wide awake. You move to another location. This is really important. You go to the couch, for instance. You get comfortable. You lay down again. And then you, for instance, you could imagine yourself in a whirlpool. And again, I'm doing this very briefly.
That's all right.
There's motion techniques. There's many different ones. But one of them is you imagine yourself in a whirlpool. And you feel yourself spinning around. And you try to hold that sensation of yourself going around in a whirlpool as your last conscious thought as you go to sleep. And while you're doing this, it also may help to do affirmations, like, now I'm out of body, or something along those lines. In other words, have that intention clearly ingrained in your conscious mind.
Got it.
That now my desire is to have an out-of-body experience.
Will it?
Will it, as much as you can, as you're doing a technique. And again, there's 50 different techniques that I write about.
All right, with regard to the one you just described, I'm curious why it is important to move.
We are conditioned to sleep unconscious in our beds. We've programmed ourselves through our lifetime. You know, what do people consider a good night's sleep? Unconsciousness.
Yes.
And that's, of course, not the result we want now. It's important to move, to change the environment so the result is different. The ideal is to create a meditation area devoted to this practice. I use my sofa. Most of my experiences, or at least the vast majority of them, have been not in my bed but on my sofa. And this is a very effective technique. Now, it takes some discipline because you're interrupting your REM period. This is also called the interrupted sleep or the sleep deprivation technique. But it's basically you're interfering with your REM cycle.
Okay.
Because, you know, the first REM period occurs 90 minutes in the sleep, and then they occur a little more frequently as you go through the night, where the second one may be an hour in.
So you're kind of disturbing the very center part of the sleep cycle.
Yes, yes. And that, of course, and you're placing your intentions, a strong intention, and you're doing a specific OBE technique. This combination is very powerful. Most people can have an experience within 30 days or less.
What can you expect? Can you describe the best way you're able what somebody, if they're going to try this, might expect to happen, feel? What will they experience?
Just some of the things that we were describing at the beginning of the show, possibly.
Yes, yes.
First, you have to get relaxed enough. You want to allow your body to totally relax. Relaxation is really critical.
Okay, now I'm talking about if we get past the vibrational state, the noise, and the the discomfort, and it's very discomforting, and you feel like you're out of control, but suddenly, let go, and now you're having your OBE, then what do you expect?
Most people, they have a lightness or heaviness sensation will come over them, and they'll begin to, what I suggest to many people is that they just have a sense, if you feel a lightness sensation, like you're floating in your body,
yes,
then roll sideways, because you have to break the energy mold. One of the problems here at the beginning of people having OBEs is that they forget, it's almost like for lack of a better word, it's like a gelatin mold. There is an energetic connection between your physical and your non-physical body. And that has to be disrupted a little bit in order to have the full experience. And you do that by rolling or directing. This is very important. You surrender to the sensation of floating and you direct your energy body to the door. I use door or window because there's always a door somewhere.
Sure.
And you direct your consciousness away from your body. In other words, you don't even think about your body. That's the number one rule, actually the only rule. Is that
you're saying, if I'm hearing this right, that you roll, you said, as though you're rolling out of your body. You're separating.
That's exactly it. And that's what many people experience. It sounds silly almost, but it works.
Okay.
And it breaks the energy mold. Now, some people have a floating sensation. Some people lift up. Everyone's differently. I talk about six different exits that people have during OBEs in my book.
What's the most common, the rolling that you're describing?
Probably the floating is the most commonly reported one.
Yep.
But, again, and there's also sinking. I've had an experience on many occasions where I have a multiple-story home, and I sink right through the first floor down into the basement.
I don't think I'd like that as much as floating.
But yet in shamanic cultures, that's the norm. It depends. In our culture, people want to go upward. They want to be like the Tinkerbell thing.
Well, besides, the sensation of floating or even flying is superb.
Oh, it's wonderful.
That's
as
a pleasant one, yeah. That's good.
It's pleasurable. And it's much more, let's just say, liberating. It's incredibly liberating. And that's the first thing that really attracts. That's the first thing that hooked me. I felt like for the first time I was free.
That one gets me, too. I absolutely love flying dreams. I have a lot of those and floating, a lot of that. But when it gets to the noise, the vibration, the paralysis, I pull back like...
Right.
Well, you know, I'm a chicken. I swear I can't let go.
Well, you know, all the vibrations and all, you know what that's from? That's from a slow separation. Once you fully separate, all the harshness of the process disappears.
All right. Mike from Colorado Springs, Colorado, is on my computer screen, not being kind to you at all. He says, your guest is ignorant. I've had thousands of OBEs. When you open yourself to that, you open yourself to anything that comes, including the bad. It's dangerous. Also, spiritually speaking, it does not advance you. It's a distraction. Now, there, William, you've got yourself a religious guy.
Absolutely. You know what's funny is that most of the biblical texts, many of the religions were created from OBEs. Look at Revelations begins with, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day.
Yeah.
I mean, people forget. The most rapidly growing religion in the world is Islam. That's based on the out-of-body experience of Muhammad when he travels through what he terms the seven heavens.
Mm-hmm.
And people forget that. Yeah, it's a shame that people still live in fear of the unknown. You know, it's only 600 years ago people were afraid to cross the Atlantic Ocean.
Well,
I mean,
a Christian might say, probably would say, well, yeah, that's how Islam got started. It's not the real thing. Our Christianity is a real thing. Therefore, anything of a spiritual, detached spiritual nature is something other than what I read in the Bible.
Well, then you should read the Bible a little closer, because in 1 Corinthians, St. Paul talks about, he states, I know someone in Christ who 14 years ago, whether in the body or out of the body, was called up to the third heaven. I mean, and this goes on and on about different comments about so-called Christian saints having out-of-body experiences.
But, gee,
William, I know it's a matter of interpretation.
Even I wonder if we're crossing into this other dimension or this other realm or whatever state we're putting ourselves in when we do what you have described here, by your own admission, the dead are all around us. Everything is all around us. So, aren't you opening a door between one area and another area, and how can there be any guarantee that it's all going to be good on the other side of the door?
That's a good point, and I can't guarantee that. No one can. No more than I can guarantee someone's safety is walking across the street. But I like to preface something. This is an important point.
It's interesting you would say that, though.
I also teach people spiritual protection in my workshops, and I write about it in my book.
Oh, you do?
Absolutely. I don't just tell people here, let's all, everybody gets to go out of body and see what may come.
Well, most OBE people who write about it, who write books about it, will deny there's any even possible negative aspect to it. They deny that.
I have never said that. I think there can be. I certainly think there can be issues that would come up, just like there's issues in the physical world. There's no separation of the two. But I also believe that we're immortal, and we are protected. But you know, it's up to a person's fear level and their personal mindset. If you are afraid of the devil stalking you, then certainly you shouldn't go out and try to have an OBE. Because if anything, you will create a negative experience for yourself.
Really?
Because of your, let's just say, thoughts. Remember, and I think all the audience, this is so important, we create reality. Thoughts are things.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen this. That's one of the powerful things about OBEs. You go out of body, you can see. I'll give you a brief example. I had an out-of-body experience a few years ago where I saw a cruise ship. And I didn't understand it. It took me a long time to understand. We're seeing the substructure of the physical world. We're seeing the formation of matter.
And so then what?
And then 6 months later, I was asked to be a speaker on a cruise ship. I had actually interacted with and saw during an OBE my future that was forming energetically on the inner planes.
Huh.
In other words, thoughts are things. They're creative, and If you have negative thoughts, you're going to create a negative experience.
Okay. But there's also coincidence. I mean, that you got to go on a cruise ship is nice, but I mean, how
I'm just using this as an example. My point is, this applies to everything. This is what psychics do.
Yes.
What does the psychic do? People, you know, no one ever talks about this. Psychics are sensitive. They are sensitive to the energy around the person. You know what they're actually reading? And most people have no idea this. They're reading the energy, the thought forms around the person. And that's how they can, I'm talking about a good psychic, not some quack.
Right.
They're actually feeling, sensing, or seeing, because different psychics have different abilities, different, let's just say, senses that they've developed. They actually can see and feel the thought forms around the person, and that's how they can tell the future. Because they are sensing the thoughts, the future that's already being constructed on the astral plane.
Yeah,
that is what psychic is.
I can't deny that any of this may well be so. I just can't. Something that we've talked about here on the air, I note that you have written down here, and I'm glad because it fits right in. We were talking a little while ago about computers, vibration, the flicker rate of a computer, and altered states, and, you know, we've had all these reports of what we call shadow people, and these are, I don't know, beings or something that is on the edge of reality and at the edge of your vision, peripheral vision, and you just see them flitting across, but you definitely saw something. And some people have begun to even see these creatures or whatever they are full on. And I'm wondering, and wondered when we got deep into that discussion about shadow beings, if it could be true. So many reports from people who use computers a lot. If perhaps using that computer, it just shifts our vibrational rate enough that we get a glimpse of something we wouldn't otherwise see.
I think that's possible because when you stare at a computer long enough, you're entering an altered state.
Absolutely.
What most people aren't aware of, you're actually changing your brain wave pattern.
That's correct, yes.
The same way as you do when you watch TV.
Yes.
These are different states of consciousness. You're no longer in beta. Some people go as deep as theta while they're at the computer. I know I do on occasions. I go really deep. I find myself zoning out completely. And so a lot of people do that, and I think once you enter in that altered state of consciousness, then we're back to, remember what we were talking about with the ghost?
Yes.
In a way, it's the same kind of phenomena occurring.
Yes.
These are beings that not only are we shifted our brain waves and our ability to perceive a little bit, but there are beings that can lower their vibration rate enough to be at least seen just for a brief period of time. The same is true for poltergeist activity. This same principle applies. Poltergeists are nothing more than astral beings who can lower their vibration temporarily enough to interfere or affect matter. And it's generally for a very brief period of time, and it's like, as research has proven, it's generally children, astral children, who are playing pranks on adults.
Huh.
But this is the same principle.
As I listen to you and I hear you talk about children, I reflect on the EVP shows that we've done recently, the electronic voice phenomena.
Oh, yeah.
They're remarkable, absolutely remarkable. And it would seem like those voices may come from exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. This is all interconnected.
I thought so. Listen, we've got to get phones when we get back. Stay right there, top of the hour. We will be right back. William Buhlman is my guest. He's the author of a couple of books on out-of-body experiences that you ought to check out. Adventures Beyond the Body and the Secret of the Soul.
Sign up for StreamLink at www.coasttocoastam.com, and you can hear tonight's show over and over and over.
read my mind, love. What a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old time movie, out of those from a wishing well. In a castle dark, or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet, you know that ghost is me. And I will never be set free, as long as I'm a ghost you can't see. If I could read your mind, love, what a tale your thoughts could tell. Just like a paperback novel, the kind the drugstore sells. When you reach the part where the heartache's done, the hero would be me. The hero often fails. You won't read that book again, because the ending's just too hard to take.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
A simple physical disassociative experience, do you think, folks? Or do you think it's as real as everything else that's around us? I guess that's what it really comes down to. My guest is William Buhlman, and we're going to be discussing OBEs, and we're going to start taking your calls. And, of course, they're stacked up like cordwood because so many of you have had these. It is common. It's everywhere. Everybody's having them, or almost having them. We'll be right back. This should be interesting. From William's survey. Now, bear in mind, this is a survey of 16,185 people. 98% of those responding experienced a jolt or jerk awake. 85% experienced sounds like buzzing, humming, roaring. 56% experienced vibrations or high energy sensations. 82%, wow, experienced floating, sinking, or spinning sensations. 72% sleep paralysis. 81% flying in a dream, my personal favorite. 33% being touched or lifted, never had that one. 46% a panic attack, oh, I've had that one. Overwhelming urge or fear created by strange vibrations or sounds, 46%, hearing voices or footsteps, 37%, seeing through closed eyelids, 49%, wow. Lucid dreaming, 79%, seeing or feeling the presence of an unknown non-physical being, 22%, and seeing, hearing, or speaking to a deceased loved one, 24%. And the phone lines are just blazing, as is my computer screen. So, obviously, this is serious stuff. This is, I guess, universal, almost universal.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, what I found really interesting is that there seems to be almost an evolutionary shift. People are becoming, let's just say, more open.
Yes.
Now, just think, it was only 10 years ago that psychic phenomena was really widely discussed. And now, suddenly, it's just exploding. Not only psychic phenomena to the point, but now the subject of OBEs.
Absolutely.
You know, many people feel this is part of our evolutionary process because we are heading towards being a non-physical species.
You think that will be some future moment of evolution when we actually simply discard the physical?
Yes.
You really
I think
do,
that's
really
the way
do.
We're
This is a training ground of soul. This is a dense, slowed-down molecular training ground for the developing soul. And as the soul develops, it eventually will shed the physical body. And it makes perfect sense, because that's the direction we're all heading anyway. We're all moving non-physically, whether we like it or not.
Do you think, William, just sort of a do-you-think kind of question, do you think that science will ever begin to meet up with what science scoffs at now, a lot of the things you're talking about tonight? Do you think these two will ever, that one will prove the other, and that there'll be that kind of shift?
Yes. I think it's just a matter of time. I think it's coming. Now, it may take another 20, 30 years, but I really believe that will happen.
All right. Let's get into the phone lines. I'm telling you, they're really humming. Here we go. First-time caller line, you're on the air with William Buhlman. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
This is Scott. I'm calling from Fairbanks, Alaska.
Hi, Scott. You'll have to yell at us. You're not too loud.
Sorry about that. I hope that's a little better.
Much better. Thank you.
I'm a former Marine and a combat veteran.
Yes, sir.
And I've had a dream within the past couple of days, and what's amazing about it is that three other people, veterans with similar backgrounds, have all reported the same type of dream, where, first off, let me state unequivocally that I was not shot while I was in Vietnam. I got blown up, or I should say the Jeep I was in got blown up, but I came through it without a scratch.
Yes.
However, in the dream, I'm lying on the side of the road, and I'm above myself. I can see me down there, and it feels great. I mean, and there's no pain, no sensation, no nothing. It kind of fades out, and I'm outside my present-day house, looking at it and looking at the night sky, feeling again great, absolutely fantastic.
But you're calling it a dream.
Well, I was asleep.
Okay. All right. Good. William, what about that? In other words, I don't know what that man had. I mean, how do you delineate between a dream, which we know we have, and OBEs, or do you not delineate? Are they all the same thing? I wonder.
No, I do delineate, but I think that that's the biggest, let's just say that's the biggest question out there. How does everyone determine the difference between the two? For me, I have a pretty harsh standard. I have to be consciously present. When I train people to have OBEs, I train them to feel that they have to be as present as they are in their physical body. But I also know that there's a continuum of consciousness, so that there are various states of consciousness that people experience. And I tell you, that dream, especially that whole separation,
yes,
that sounds to me like the gentleman had an OBE, and that was his mind's interpretation of it. It's like floating is the same thing. What is it? Floating dreams, I feel, are strongly. Remember, we've been conditioned from birth to believe that we're hunks of flesh. That basically, that's what we've been trained to believe, that this body is us, which is, of course, false. And we have to overcome that conditioning. And in our experiences, many people, let's just say your mind gets around it by giving it another symbol, like floating, or in his case, he had this traumatic event or whatever in this Jeep or whatever, this vehicle, and then he was floating above it.
Mm-hmm.
And for you, Art, it's that flying sensation that you like so much.
Oh, I love flying dreams.
But yeah. It's the same kind of scenario. Your mind is interpreting that as a flying dream or a floating dream when that could actually be the OBE occurring, and your mind's trying to wrap itself around it and interpret it according to its own belief system.
Giving everybody a chance to have a proper little laugh, my best flying dream ever was in New York City, and I was on top of the Empire State Building, and somebody sprinkled me with pixie dust. Gosh, wasn't pixie dust. I don't know. They just tossed some dust on me, like little sprinkles of something, and I was able to fly at will over New York City. It was the most fun I ever had in my whole life, just zipping around the high-rise buildings. I did that So have your laugh, but that was my one of my flying dreams. I have some pretty good ones.
And you know, that's very common. That's the type of thing that people, the jerk awake that you mentioned at the intro. You know, that's what a lot of everybody out there listening probably has experienced at some time in their life, laying in their bed or laying on the couch taking a nap, and then suddenly you feel like you just fell out of the sky and fell on your sofa.
Yeah, that's right.
And it scares, it shocks you.
Yep.
It's like, oh my God, what was that?
Uh-huh.
Many people, including myself, feel strongly that was the rapid reintegration of the astral body with the physical body. And it's because as you fall asleep, there's a natural separation that occurs. And it's not like, I'm not saying that you were floating up at the ceiling. You may have been out of sync maybe 2-3 inches from your physical body.
Yes, and I've also had the others, that is the dropping thing. And I'm sure a whole lot of people in the audience have had that. But you go, oh, like that, and you wake yourself up and you were dropping.
But that's a classic case of their mind interpretation of a non-physical event.
Yeah, but see, here's the problem. How do you get past that? In other words, how do you say to yourself in that panicked, horrid little moment, instant, when you're dropping, well, wait a minute, this is cool, let's drop. Oh, no, it doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't. Like, That's why you have to become educated about the topic. It's really just the way it is. It's like any other topic. You have to learn about it. You can't control every aspect of this, and I'm certainly not inferring you can.
Okay. Wild card line, you're on the air with William Buhlman. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Art?
Yes.
Hi, I saw you on Discovery today.
I beg your pardon?
I saw you on Discovery today.
What was I doing on Discovery?
Well, I'll ask you another show, but you were talking about overrunning in the city about a guy that wanted to pull a grenade and
I don't remember this.
Oh yeah, you were on twice.
Okay.
And I'll ask you another time.
All right.
And Art, my friend, actually my first love, just passed away a couple
of
days
ago.
Well, the song that I heard three times, "Waiting for You," was "If You Could Read My Mind."
And oh yeah.
I thought this is so.
Right on the money.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, here's a question I'd like to ask your guest.
Mm-hmm.
My mother, 5 months before she passed away, my father told us that they had separate bedrooms, and her bedroom was next to his, and he heard a noise like in the kitchen, and he thought, what's Mom doing up?
Speak up, good and loud.
Oh, he went to look, and he said to her, what are you doing up? You know, and it was early in the morning, and he said, she floated. Mm-hmm. He said he didn't walk. She just floated into another room, and he thought, where's she going? And he went to look, and here she was in her bedroom, in her bed, lying on her back, and she was sound asleep.
Hmm.
And my dad told her that the next day, and she said, I don't know why my soul wanders.
In other words, actually a physical sighting of somebody outside their body. Okay, that's a good one indeed. William, what about that? How many reports, since you're taking stats on this, have you ever had of people observing other people in an out-of-body state? Is that...
it's very common.
It's
very common.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, as you know, the entire Stargate program is kind of built around that potential.
Yes.
I mean, you know, the military was trained to spy on the Soviets using the same kind of, let's just say, ability. $50 million was spent by the military in Fort Meade. I'm from Maryland.
Yeah, I'm
originally in the
remote viewer on tomorrow night.
Yeah, I mean, that's another whole topic, but it's related to this topic.
I've always known it was. I mean,
the two are like peas in a pod, but it's just a, you know, that's we're, of course, for the audience information, we're speaking of remote viewing.
I wrote a book.
We're connected.
William, I wrote a book called The Source because I've always had the feeling that a whole lot of what I talk about on this program is all tied together. It all relates, that there's some commonality,
yeah,
and there's some source for all of this. And that's just a word, the source, right? But it served to kind of describe the collective everything that we're talking about, whether we're talking about remote viewing or the phenomena of OBEs or near death or, you know, ghosts or shadow people. I mean, you can just go on and on and on. It all somehow relates.
Oh, absolutely. You know what the core element here is the multidimensional universe.
Right.
Because the multidimensional universe explains all of this phenomena. And it explains it very accurately.
Yes, it does.
And logically.
It does.
It directly correlates with all modern physics theories.
It does.
Including the superstring theory that I'm sure you know all about. This stuff is not just theoretical. I mean, this is there are some of the greatest minds in the world today would come on your show right now and tell you, yes, the universe is multidimensional.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're really talking about right now with OBEs.
Okay, East of the Rockies, you're talking about it now with William Buhlman. Hello.
Hi, William.
Hi,
Art. This is Anthony in Columbia, Missouri.
Yes, sir.
I was paralyzed in a car accident about 16 years ago. Since then, I've experienced lucid dreams and flying dreams and quote-unquote anti-gravity dreams. And I was wanting to know what suggestions you may have for an aspiring astral traveler and others who might have a disability, especially some or a lot of paralysis. Like myself, I'm paralyzed from about the mid-chest down. And as I've said before, I've had experiences where I know that I'm dreaming while I'm dreaming,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm controlling the flying, and sometimes I control it better than other times, and other times I lose the ability, and then I know I'm going to wake up. And so I've had very, very little experience. And I was wanting to know what type of techniques you would be able to give someone such as myself. Also, I was wanting to know what you thought about Robert Bruce's comprehensive book, Astral Dynamics, what you thought about it.
All right, well, that's an awful lot to serve up, so...
Okay, but I'd be happy to comment. The technique that I would suggest you to learn immediately is a very simple one, but very powerful, and it's just awareness now. Use awareness now as a mantra when you're in those states, like lucid dreams. Train yourself to use that power phrase. And it will help to focus your awareness within your experience. Now, the power of this applies not only to lucid dreaming, but also to full-blown OBEs. It helps to prolong the OBE, and it helps to control a lucid dream, if that's the state you're in. Remember, all these states are connected, because there is a continuum of consciousness.
Just say that to myself aloud?
Well, if you're in an altered state, you'll be thinking it. You never want to activate your physical body during an altered state. You always are using, and when I say, I'm meaning think.
Okay.
Focusing your thoughts, awareness now. I use it, and I train people to use that so they can prolong their OBEs. Because that's a big problem for a lot of people is, let's just say, getting the most out of their experience when it begins.
My problem is I feel that I'll have difficulty in raising my energy.
Well, whatever quality you need, demand that quality.
Okay.
Always remember that. You have the ability to call the energy you need within yourself. Because remember, it's all about energy.
Do I imagine hands raising energy up?
No, just think energy up, if that's how you don't have. You don't have to think hands. You don't want to think form.
Okay.
I think this is my take on this. Based on my experience, you don't want to be any form-based thought will limit you.
Oh,
because then you're connecting back with form,
with physical,
which of course your mind will equate to being physical. So it's very important to get your mind off of all form and think energy, think lighter, think whatever it takes to get you moving. If you want to have more separation, then think I am lighter. Think of yourself as a balloon floating up.
Oh, okay.
Never think of yourself as a humanoid or a form, because it will just lock you into that state.
Interesting.
And you have books at your website?
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Take care. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Buhlman. Not a lot of time before the top of the bottom of the hour. Hi.
Hi, Art Bell. I'm glad you're back on the radio. You have the best telephone and radio voice in the world.
Oh, you're sweetie. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Christina. I'm calling you from 770 KKOB, Albuquerque. Anyway, I've never had any of those negative experiences, except I've been doing this since I was 12 months old. It's always been wonderful and enlightening.
Nothing but good, huh?
Yes, and I remember the first ones were when my mother platonized me, and she would be admonishing me, and I would just stare, and all of a sudden I would be above it all, thinking how ridiculous she looked at pointing her finger at me, admonishing me.
I've got you. All right, listen, hold on. We're at a break point. I'll bring you back after the break. This is Crystal.
I'm ready for the times to get better.
Crystal Gale, actually. Good morning. We're talking about going out of your body.
I've got to tell you, I've been racking my brain, hoping to find a way out. I've had enough.
He's got this demon fog behind some land. He's gone. Give up the booze and the one-night stands, and then settle down in a quiet little town and forget about everything. But you know he'll always keep moving. You know he's never gonna stop moving. 'Cause he's rolling, he's the rolling stone.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
You're going home. Maybe, not maybe, but eventually we're all going home. And maybe that's what that experience is kind of like. Kind of like going home. We're talking about out of body. The ability of you, everybody, if you want to go out of your body. Yes, it can be done. Once again, William Buhlman, who again, folks, has written two books. So if you want to know more, it's the obvious way. The Secret of the Soul and his latest, I guess, Adventures Beyond the Body? Is that correct?
Oh, The Secret of the Soul
is the latest.
The most recent.
Okay. That's a, boy, what a great title, The Secret of the Soul. I mean, is that, do you think that's descriptive of what's in that book, The Secret of the Soul?
I think it is. That's exactly what it's about. I think OBEs is a direct path to the soul.
All right. Here's that young lady once again. You're back on, dear.
So my question is, I've always been able to do this, and it's always been pleasant. Never had any of those, and I've always been caught awake. And one of the weirdest ones, though, is I worked for Prudential Base, and I was trading commodities, and I zoomed up outside my body to the top. I could see the entire floor. This is a...
While you were trading commodities?
The guy in back of me was trading hog bellies, and I was just about ready to call one of my clients. And I found myself working, doing everything. And then it occurred to me, well, maybe I just better go back down there.
Yeah, maybe I better get down before hogs fall.
But And it helped me make a decision that I needed to make, which was to take my business independent with me.
All right, listen, you're breaking up on your cell phone, but I've got the idea. And let's try this question. Tom in El Paso, Texas, says straight out, where can you go? How can it be useful? Really practical questions. Where can you go? How can it be useful?
Well, the bottom line is anywhere. And you can obtain the answers to whatever question you want to ask. And I'm not being facetious at all. If you want to know your purpose, then just ask your purpose during an OBE and be open to receive the answer. The deep questions of life. If you want to meet your mother who has passed on, then yes, just call her name. And if she's open to it, you will be drawn together to meet. Okay. I know because I've done it, and hundreds of other people have done the same.
Is there any information that you can glean by doing this that would be in a material sense useful to you on Earth?
I think there's a lot of different things that you remember what we were talking about, it being thoughts being the creative force that molds matter. You know, the very core of the old, what is considered the magical arts, is really about manipulating the energy that you can't see to mold it into physical reality.
The guest I'm going to have tomorrow night is a pretty rough guy. He's Luciferian, but he's a remote viewer, and he claims that he can win lotteries and has won lotteries, William, using remote viewing. And so that's about as practical and...
Yeah, and I tried doing that once. I asked for the winning lottery numbers.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and guess what happened?
I
saw a stone wall with to infinity numbers. I'm serious. That's exactly the result I got from doing that because I wasn't specific enough when I made the request.
It was a dirty trick. Okay, International Line, you're on the air with William Buhlman. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine. Where are you, please?
I'm calling from Toronto. I'm listening on 640 Mojo.
Okay.
First of all, I feel surrounded in greatness. I am so honored to talk to both of you.
Thank you.
William, I don't know where to start. I could talk all night.
But
I've been having OBEs since I was a child. It took, I guess, a near-death experience is what I had, and I realized what was happening to me after that. And I'm finding over the years, I'm becoming disabled with a degenerative disease. And as I had to learn to cope with it emotionally, I learned to meditate. And through the meditating, I have the OBEs now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm listening to other people talking tonight, and it's bringing more and more questions. But this idea of the soul and moving towards a soul as opposed to the physical body is making so much more sense to me. I can be anywhere, and I can ask any questions and get those answers, like you just said a moment ago.
So you agree with all that?
Absolutely. But originally, my question was this. Do you believe that it's possible in an out-of-body experience that I could visit a place that I've never been before and be able to describe in detail where I am?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It happened only because about 2 months later, I was there. But I knew the first time in the OBE that that's where I was.
Well, is that a precognitive OBE, kind of like your cruise ship thing?
It sure sounds like it.
Yeah, it does.
That's what it sounds like to me. Often we have experiences, all of us do this, not just certain people. We have experiences on the inner dimensions that are parallel to this one. And then they end up manifesting in the physical. It's very common.
Is it as common, do you think, to experience a slice of the future as it is the past?
Yes, I think the timeline is, for those that are open to it, the timeline is available both future and past. And again, it's up to the individual. I've experienced many different let's just say, of my personal past lives, and I've verified that through multiple experiences, like the one I mentioned about being a German soldier in my last incarnation.
Well, then,
and I know I gained certain qualities from that experience.
Then certainly this would have applications. She said she had a disabling degenerative disease of some sort. I would think for people in that position, people in wheelchairs, people who are paralyzed perhaps or have disabilities that won't let them move, won't let them go anywhere, they could learn this.
Oh, absolutely. And I, what I would also suggest is that you can, again, there's karma involved, but you can request healing also during an OBE. And I had an entire chapter in my latest book devoted to that, but the book was getting too long, so I had to cut it.
Huh.
But I had an entire chapter with 15 experiences with people that had healed themselves and other people.
All right, your website is up and linked to ours at the
yes.
moment, but that won't be there forever. So go ahead and tell people, what is your website, please?
It's astralinfo.org, and I also have two websites, actually.
Astralinfo.org, that's another good one.
Yeah, and that's the one that's linked to your site, Art, and I also have outofbody.com.
You have outofbody.com?
Yeah. I've had that since 96.
Remarkable.
I'm like one of the early guys on the web.
So when you go Google this up, outofbody.com is probably got to be right there.
Yeah, or astral projection. You'll see one of my sites come up.
Well, gee,
I like to mention that to all the listeners, that they please go, and they've had an experience or think they have, go and participate in the survey. It only takes a minute.
You live another 20 years, William, and those URLs will be worth millions. First time caller line, you're on the air with William Buhlman. Hello.
Hey, good evening, Art.
Good evening.
Good evening, William.
Good evening.
That's a great show tonight, by the way.
Thank you.
I do have a question for William, and to me, the last hour or two I've been listening, a lot of this is from a theosophical point of view. And I was wondering if William has ever attended a theosophical meeting, and what does he know about the works of Madame Blavatsky? This is what I've been studying for about 15 years now, and I've been really into it.
All right, then take a listen. Go ahead, William.
I've never attended a meeting, but I'm familiar with Madame Blavatsky's work and Ledbetter and Besant. I have quite an extensive library on all subjects related to this. So I'm quite familiar with their work, and I respect what they've done. They really, back when, they really opened the door to a lot of this. Mm-hmm. Now, my goal, of course, is to demystify this topic.
Yeah, and you're doing a very, very good job of it. I would like to ask this. We've had William Monroe, a great man, many others who have done the research in this field now, William. Where is the leading research, and where is it going from here?
I tell you the truth, I don't see a lot of research out there right now. I really don't. I'm not anything that I'm aware of. But I'm not currently aware of it.
But that doesn't make sense. I mean, if this is an increasing revelation to a lot of people, and it certainly is, I mean, look at the response. It's crazy here. Then why wouldn't there be a ton of research in this area?
I know. It blows my mind, Art. You know what it comes down to?
What?
There's no way that these people can make money with it.
Huh.
So there's not a lot of interest. We live in a capitalist society. There has to be motivation for a monetary motivation. I'll give you an example. I was invited to speak on several occasions in prisons. I get a tremendous amount of mail from prisoners.
I can imagine.
And they refused to have me in because I was too out there. It wasn't considered valid self-improvement according to their standards.
Well,
even
plus
though
in the mind of the administration, it may represent a form of escape.
Well, or it just didn't fit into their belief system, whatever that may be. It doesn't matter.
But I would think, actually, getting really right down to it, that administrations ought to rethink that because they want to keep the prison population, not agitated, right? And
plus, plus that, this is a life-changing experience
that could
rehabilitate prisoners.
That as well. But even that aside for a second, an escape without an actual physical escape would be certainly a psychological release that would keep prisons a lot calmer than they sometimes are.
I think it would. I think there would be all kinds of benefits, but I couldn't. I had a whole group of prisoners in one federal institution trying to get me in there, and they wouldn't go for it. It's weird because there's a very narrow-minded take on this whole subject. You know, it's still the old philosophy. If you can't, you know, see it and feel it, we don't want to deal with it. And it's a shame because this is so important to everybody, because this is where we're all going. We're all going to become non-physical beings very shortly. I mean, in the big picture, what's 30 years or 20 years or whatever? Yeah. And this is important stuff that impacts everybody's lives.
That I recognize, and that's the reason this program is here on such a large national scale. Yes, there's not very many others like it, but it's here because we're telling people things that they can't hear anywhere else. That's all there is to it. They can't hear them anywhere else. Doesn't
that's
make
right.
everything we say true, but we explore areas that are not explored elsewhere in great detail, and there's just not much of that going on out there right now. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with William Buhlman. Hi.
Hello, this is Larry in Fort Lauderdale.
Hi, Larry.
I had a question. I had a dream, and I've had a few times in my life, where I'm like flying, like your other callers have said, and I'm like flying over water. But the thing that's surprising me the most while it's happening is not the fact that I'm flying, but that the method and ability I was using to fly seems so familiar, and that I always had this ability, this feeling, and it seems so natural and so normal. And I was more amazed at that feeling that I always had the ability in me to fly than flying itself, which was, you know, a beautiful scene over the ocean. Is something like this common?
Yes, it is. Boy, that's one of the things that always blew me away. That's one of my favorite things to do during an OBE. I'll be fully conscious. I call it upgrading. I say awareness now. When I say, and I mean thinking, focused thought, awareness now. And then you can take off like a bird. If you think you have that ability, you have the ability. And I was amazed the first time I flew. Is not only did I do it, but I did it extremely well. And that's what caught my attention, was that, God, I'm good at this.
But
first time out of the chute. Because we've all done this before.
That's the feeling that I had.
It's knowledge that's locked in the subconscious mind that you release during the experience, I feel.
I see. And Art, I had a quick comment. Have you noticed that your out-of-body experiences always seem to happen out of town in some major city?
Yes. Yes, I have noticed that, and thank you. And, what I attributed to was that, number one, I was on vacation. Routine was broken. Number two, I wasn't home. As you point out, I was in a very different place. I mean, good Lord, I had just come over, you know, at twice the speed of sound on the Concorde, and there I was in Paris, France, in bed. You don't get any more unfamiliar than that, and that's when it happened. So,
absolutely. That's why in that technique I shared earlier, I ask people to move away from their bed. Same principle applies.
Huh.
You shake up the routine.
Right.
It's really important to shake up the routine so that we are conditioned to, let's just say, remain unconscious.
What is it you think about human beings, William, that has them investigating everything physical around them, on our planet, beneath our planet, above our planet, out of the atmosphere, stars, the very beginning of it all. We're looking everywhere around us physically, but we're not looking inward.
I know, isn't it funny? I just look around and laugh.
It's
incredible. The answers are inward. You know, Buddha said that. All you go back through history,
yes.
The great minds of humanity, and they all said the same thing, that the answers lie within.
Hmm.
And yet we focus completely on the external.
Well,
it's no wonder there's still wars and killing, mass murders occurring on a regular basis.
Yes, but I mean, as somebody familiar with hypnosis and psychology to some degree, I mean, you must have some theory on why this is. It's
part of our evolution. There's individuals are evolving beyond matter. Let's face it, the physical world is like the Matrix, like the movie Matrix.
Yes.
The physical world is the Matrix. Huh. It's nothing more than illusionary energy that people have bought into and accept as unconditionally real. When you have an OBE, you escape the Matrix. I mean, for real. That's what you feel like. You feel liberated.
That's what happens. Now,
and that's what I think that actually I feel strongly that the movie was written on that premise.
All right, we're way short on time here. Of your two books, for those who are intrigued tonight, and I can tell you they're legion, would you recommend they begin with your first book or just dive straight into number two?
I would say probably I'd go with Adventures Beyond the Body, but I would see they're both so different. I would recommend both, because one of them is my experiences. Adventures Beyond the Body focuses on my 25 years back then of experiences, where Secret of the Soul was based on hundreds of other people's experiences. So you get a whole different viewpoint of the subject. And that's why I thought it was important to write the second book, because I didn't want this to be, you know, about me or what, you know, and that's what ends up happening in so many books out there.
Yes.
Because this is too big of a topic to be around. Everybody's interpretation is going to be a little different.
It's a monstrous topic, just like the whole consciousness thing is a monster of a topic.
The important thing is that people learn about this themselves.
William, program's over. That's it. We're out of time, my friend. It has been a total pleasure having you here. I really appreciate it, and I wish you all the luck in the world.
You too, Art. Been a pleasure.
Take care, my friend. All right, there's William Buhlman, and the subject OBEs, really, not body. You really can do it if you want to. That's it for tonight. We'll see you tomorrow night with one more, tomorrow night. Kind of on the dark side a little bit. Aaron Donahue, Luciferian, remote viewer. It's going to be quite a night. See you then.